using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
It's Monday, the 9th of August, year of our Lord, 2021, day 513 of America Held Hostage. Well, today we're going to take a look at not just the Obama variant, but we're also going to look at the metastasizing tyranny within the Republican Party, pushing yet again for more mask mandates. As we have Rahm Emanuel say, don't call it a mandate, call it a requirement to live your life. Yeah, the semantics. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay with us. Let's begin with headline news. We have Ben Shapiro saying that the January 6th rioters will end up rotting in prison, as they should. Well, you know, they've cast a pretty wide net, and it extends to people who may have been violent, who don't necessarily deserve a life sentence. Do they, Ben? Do they deserve due process, Ben? I don't know what country you're from or you identify with, but in our country, in America, we have due process. And you don't hold people in jail for months, denying them due process and then torturing them while they're in jail. You don't arrest people who are not violent, who merely are told by the guards that they can come on in. He's not making any distinction there. He tried to push back on Bill Maurer, real time with Bill Maurer. And the other guy that was there was even worse, of course. Malcolm Nance said that Trump mobilized 40,000 people to lay siege to the Capitol. But, of course, in defending that, Shapiro says, well, 40,000 people did not assault the Capitol. There were maybe 1,000 people. That is not making light of the evil of those people who will all end up rotting in prison, as they should. Well, if they are guilty, there should be due process, there should be a speedy trial, there should be some proportionality to this. And considering the fact that we didn't have anyone with Antifa who were torching cities, nobody's being prosecuted for that, it seems to me like there's also unequal protection under the law, isn't there? But of course, Ben Shapiro is afraid to tackle that. Or maybe he's just down with it, right? As Chris Menahan pointed out, rather than raising awareness of how Capitol protesters are being tortured, beaten, racially abused, locked in solitary confinement, Ben Shapiro chose to denounce them as evil and to declare they should all rot in prison for trespassing, you know, on sacred ground. Let me tell you, there's nothing sacred in Washington. That is the most degenerate, filthy town you've ever seen. And it's literally physically filthy, and the people who occupy it are filthy degenerates. They have absolutely no moral authority to govern. They are oath breakers at the very least, every single one of them. How could anyone not realize this bought and paid for shill is controlled opposition, says Chris Menahan. Well, it's absolutely true. Let's take a look at the importance of due process, for example. This is a story coming from Free Thought Project. An innocent man was locked in a mental facility, forcibly drugged for years because nobody cared to even identify him. You know, well, this is kind of like one flew over the cuckoo's nest, isn't it? Except they say, well, he just flew under the radar. Every time he would say you got the wrong man, they would say you're mentally ill. and they would give him some more drugs. It sounds like the Soviet Union, doesn't it? If you criticize the government, you're obviously mentally ill, because you certainly know what we do to people who criticize the government. So nobody other than the mentally ill would attempt to criticize the government. That's the logic. Every time Joshua Spreisterbach tried telling the doctors, nurses, and staff at a state hospital in Hawaii that they had the wrong man, no one listened. And his protests were answered with drugs. After nearly 3 years, the blithering idiots running the hospital finally figured out their blunder. Instead of fixing their mistake, they covered it up by quietly kicking Spreisterbach out on the street with 50 cents. 50 cents. The Hawaiian Innocence Project is now representing Spreisterbach, and this week they asked the court to correct the innocent man's life. Well, you can't correct his life. You can give him some compensation, perhaps. The project explains that the state was looking for a man named Thomas Castleberry. They grabbed the first person they saw instead, Spreisterbach. According to the report, at the time, Spreisterbach was homeless and hungry and was waiting in a food line in 2017 outside of a Honolulu shelter. The line was long. He fell asleep, only to be roused awake by a cop who was arresting him. Spreisterbach thought he had been arrested for breaking the city's ordinance of laying down on the sidewalk, but he was mistaken. That officer falsely claimed that Spreisterbach was Thomas Castleberry, who had a warrant out for his arrest for violating probation in a 2006 drug case. Spreisterbach and Castleberry had never met, yet the police and every official involved with his wrongful kidnapping claimed that he was Castleberry. And the more he vocalized his innocence by asserting that he was not Mr. Castleberry, the more he was declared delusional and psychotic by the staff and the doctors, and they heavily medicated him. The Innocence Project said all that was needed to be done was just to figure out that he was not Castleberry. You just needed to look at photographs or take fingerprints. They didn't do any of that. None of that. So they point out that Spreisterbach was in an agitated state, obviously. It's understandable. He was being wrongfully incarcerated for Castleberry's crimes. Despite his continual denial of being Mr. Castleberry and providing all of his relevant identifications and places where he was located during Castleberry's court appearances, no one would believe him or take any meaningful steps to verify his identity. Not going to look at his fingerprints, not going to look at his photographs. This is truly Kafka-esque, isn't it? Or maybe it's kind of like Brazil. I keep telling my family, when you go back and watch that again, they found it too depressing. And it is depressing in a sense. It was kind of a satire of 1984. But, you know, one of the fundamental things that begins at the movie is they have a guy who is printing out arrest warrants, and he swats a fly, and it falls into the primitive machinery that they have. That's one of the other aspects of it, it's a completely totalitarian society, very brutal and over the top, but nothing works right. They have Fresnel lenses over the TVs to make them look bigger, and all the equipment is not quite working. But that doesn't stop them from being thoroughly brutal. So this fly falls into the typewriter, and it types out Buttle instead of Tuttle. And the next thing you see is a family enjoying their Christmas time, and all of a sudden there is a hole cut in the ceiling, and these guys grapple down from the ceiling. There you go, there's part of it. Yeah, it's a very, very dark mid-20th century look to it. These guys grapple down the ceiling, and you have them busting in the door. It's totally over the top for 1984, which is when it came out. But it's basically what we live in now. And they grab the guy, they put a bag over his head, they make his wife sign a receipt for him and take him away. And that's basically, so this guy's real life experience is kind of a combination of this dystopian film, Brazil, there you go, that's what they do, right? Good job, Travis, pulling that up quickly. It's kind of a combination of Brazil and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you know, medication time, if you push back against it. It's just, when you look at this, and this is one of the reasons why I say Ben Shapiro, you know, dude, you might want to just pay attention to what's really happening in this country. And I think he knows. He's a smart guy. I think he doesn't care. I think he's perfectly fine with this type of action being done because it's not going to affect him. He doesn't have to worry about that as long as he sells the company line. As long as he pushes vaccines, as long as he pushes what the military-industrial complex and the war machine and the welfare machine want, Ben Shapiro doesn't have to worry about any of that. He's protected. All these guys are. Instead of apologizing immensely to the man they forcibly drugged and caught in cage for nearly 3 years, Free Thought Project writes, officials moved secretly to cover up their incompetence. You know what? He's lucky that they didn't just kill him, because that's the way a lot of these things end up. If they had been somebody of a higher level, like Fauci or Hillary Clinton, they probably would have just killed him instead of turning him out on the street with 50 cents in his pocket. A secret meeting was held with all the parties except for Mr. Spreisterbach. There is no court record of this meeting, no public court record of this meeting, no entry or order reflects this miscarriage of justice that occurred, or a finding that Mr. Spreisterbach is not Thomas Castleberry. And then we have this from another political prisoner. I've talked many times to Marty Gottesfeld's wife, and he is being punished for helping in a medical kidnap. And as he wrote an op-ed piece that was published in RT, they doubled down to punish him, as a matter of fact. The op-ed piece that he did initially, Dana is his wife. I've spoken to Dana many times. There was hope that President Trump would do something about this miscarriage of justice, but it was a false hope. No. He released Israeli spies. He released some of the biggest white-collar criminals this country's ever seen, friends of Jared Kushner and his corrupt family, by the way. But he didn't release people like Marty Gottesfeld, people like Schaefer Cox, or Julian Assange. How about that? The guy that helped him to get into office that he completely turned his back on. And it wasn't any political dirty tricks that Julian Assange was in. No, he simply told the truth about Hillary Clinton, and that was enough to help Trump get into office. Trump demands total loyalty, and he shows none to anybody. And he shows no loyalty to the Constitution either. But going back to Marty Gottesfeld, he wrote an op-ed piece that said, the Bureau of Prisons uses the Constitution as toilet paper, must be held accountable for barring legal calls. And so when he wrote about how he's being treated in what is called a Communications Management Unit, CMU, this is in Indiana, and they have two of these right now. The one that he is in Indiana. And they're building a third one. And this is where they put their political prisoners now, so that they cannot speak out to people that are being punished. And make no mistake about it, he is a political prisoner. He is being punished because what he did was expose medical kidnapping by Harvard, by the Boston Children's Hospital, a very powerful and politically connected organization. You don't talk about anything that Harvard does or they come after you. You can look at Aaron Schwartz, for example, and how they came after him. But there was also another element in that, and that was the fact that they wanted to push through CISPA. CISPA, SOPA, ACTA, PIPA, they finally got it with CISA. The idea that corporations would be incentivized to turn over your information. The only disincentive that they had was that you could sue them for violating your privacy. But what this act does is give them protection. And, of course, it creates yet another web of surveillance that we have been seeing. But, of course, if you listen to Steve Pachinik, it was CISA that was going to come to the rescue, and they were the ones who were running the blockchain watermark stuff. Yeah, right. Right. Anyway, going back to Marty Gottesfeld, 37 years old, he's serving 10 years behind bars after being arrested and prosecuted for cyber attacks, they said, in 2018. What he was convicted of doing was, during a fundraiser, exposing the crime that was being committed. They had nearly killed Justina Peltier. Many people had tried to talk about it, but, of course, any information that is negative about Harvard or Boston's Children's Hospital, same institution, is covered up by the local media. So he's trying to get attention to it, did get attention to it. He says his only, they basically, just to recap, she was being treated at Tufts University for her physical condition. something happened over some weekend. I forget what it was. It was flu or something like that. They took her to the hospital. The person in charge was doing some kind of a project that was a psychological type of Munchausen by proxy type of thing, and was writing a paper on that, doing a graduate thesis on that, and said, I think that's what you have. Interestingly enough, exactly what I'm running my thesis on. Projection, right? Not an objective diagnosis. And so they basically started, they put her, medically kidnapped her. Her parents could not get her out. They said, no, you're the problem. You know, you're doing this Munchausen by proxy. She doesn't have anything at all physically wrong with her. She is just being gaslighted by you. And so we're going to keep you away from her. And we're going to keep her medication away from her. She started wasting away. She'd been a very active teenager. And so this is not the only case of medical kidnapping for Boston Children's Hospital, but they put that out there. And Marty made that public. He said, without hurting a soul, I defended her life in a way that few others could, and for this I was arrested and prosecuted in 2018. Justine Peltier is alive. She's back with her family. She's trying to recuperate and recover from a year of torture. He said his biggest regret is that he didn't do it sooner. And so after he put that out, they came in and cut off his communications with his lawyers. He can't communicate with even his lawyers now, because that's what the communication management unit is for, is to make sure that you silence the enemies of the state, and that includes the enemies of the corporations that work with the state. The politically powerful, the politically connected. How long will it be before they start arresting us for criticizing Google or Twitter or Jack Dorsey, right? So when you want to see two different standards of justice, take a look at what just happened in Portland. You had a large group of Christians congregated for prayer and worship event on the waterfront in downtown Portland, Oregon. The event was announced last month by Arthur Pawlowski, the Canadian pastor, preacher, who is now being attacked himself in Canada. I had an excellent interview with him, by the way. He just started talking about his life, how Christ had changed him, changed his life. And it was so good. I had him on for the last half hour of one show, and we let it go for another full half hour and then cut that interview up separately. So you can find that interview on the places where we have our video podcast. But an amazing life story of how Christ changed him. And also, you know, he grew up in communist Poland. His family escaped to Greece. In Greece, he became a very successful businessman. He was recruited by the Canadians to come and be a successful business. And he did have a successful business. But he talked about how unhappy he was and how empty and meaningless his life was, especially when his child became sick. And that's when he started pleading with God. It's an amazing testimony of how God provided for him, answered his prayers, and changed his life. I suggest you watch it, because it has really put a backbone in this man. He cannot be stopped. He knows the God that he serves is real. And so he was announcing this prayer ministry. And when he made the announcement, Antifa taunted him and said, welcome to Portland. You won't like it here, Pastor. And said, we're getting ready with an operation to welcome you guys. And so what happened was, as these evangelical Christians congregated for prayer and worship, they were attacked by a mob of Antifa carrying shields and weapons, all dressed in black. They tore apart the sound equipment, threw it into the river there. They assaulted the attendees with pepper spray and projectiles. They attacked children. And I have to say, this all began, you know, they've gotten much bolder, more aggressive, more violent in the years. It was maybe about 6 or 7 years ago at a rally in front of the abortion clinic here in Austin, showed up with signs that said, abortion is black genocide. My wife was there with my daughter, and they were getting in everybody's face, these Marxists. You know, they typically march around in black. They have the hammer and sickle as their flag and so forth. They got in my wife's face, in Karen's face. and said, "I kill my kids." I'm bragging about the abortions that they'd had. And as Karen and my daughter were leaving, they tried to spit on my daughter. The window was up, so I spit on the car. Now they've gotten a little bit more violent. Now they're physically attacking the children and the families. They are destroying the equipment, using pepper spray, and throwing stuff at them. And so you had dozens of them armed, and they said, the taunts that they put out, "Where is your God now?" That sounds familiar to Christians, doesn't it? "Where's your God now? Can he save you?" as they said to Christ on the cross. After pulling apart the sound system, of course, they tossed it into the river there. They threw a flash bomb into a group of kids, said a female attendee who spoke to a videographer. Antifa account on Twitter later posted that they stole the Christian attendees' food and water. Oh, aren't they brave? Aren't they brave? Saturday's assault followed a string of attacks on Christian church buildings in Portland by Antifa as well. Do you wonder what their true motivation is? Is there any question about it, actually? Meanwhile, we have the people who are supposed to protect us, right, the FBI and the rest of these people. Widely ignored rules in 2016, writes the Epoch Times. Dozens in contact with reporters, and of course that's against the rules. But of course it's also against the rules for them to flash children in the park. That was another FBI agent that was just caught doing that. It's also against the rules for them to beat their wives severely, as the lead, a COINTELPRO guy, in the Michigan case did. And you're always going to have bad apples in any group. And Frank Serpico said that. He said, look, law enforcement is just like any other institution, any other human institution. You're going to have good and bad people. But the difference is, does the institution purge these people? Well, the FBI doesn't. This flasher, this wife beater, they were arrested by other law enforcement agencies, not by the FBI. The FBI condones that type of behavior, and they have as an MO setting people up to take them out, to make themselves look like heroes. They're like the fireman that sets a fire so that he can come in and put it out, and then people get hurt in the process. A review of FBI records and forensic examination of the FBI devices found that 52 employees had contacted, back in April, May of 2016, reporters who wrote stories using information. The investigation also found that 33 FBI employees had contact with the reporters later in October of 2016. There could have well been more employees who were in touch with reporters using their personal devices or face-to-face, said the Office of Inspector General. But, of course, nobody is going to be punished. The FBI will do nothing about it. And I guarantee you that the Office of Inspector General will do nothing about it. That's why it doesn't matter how many crimes they commit. Even Andrew McCabe, who committed crimes against other FBI agents, when he was fired by Trump, they were absolutely outraged. How dare you fire somebody? Because, they consider that to be lifetime guarantee of employment, no matter what you do. Anybody that's in the bureaucracy, they can stay there as long as they want. You don't ever get rid of them, no matter what they do. Watchdog report says that Fauci spent nearly $500,000, taxpayer dollars, or we could say Federal Reserve loans that'll have to be paid back by us, either in taxes or inflation. But he spent $500,000 on abusive experiments on dogs. And if you look at this picture, pull up the picture, Travis. It's a beagle looking very sad through the cage. The Fauci's organization, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, spent $424,000 in taxpayer funds to infest beagles with parasite-carrying flies, even though the procedure had already been extensively tested in other animals. About half of Fauci's $6 billion budget was used for animal experimentation, including this abusive dog experiment. They said healthy beagles were given experimental drugs, then intentionally infested with flies that carry a disease-causing parasite that affects humans. Experimenters admit that this investigational drug has been extensively tested already, and confirmed in different animal models such as mice, Mongolian gerbils, rhesus macaws, and so forth. And so, you know, even though you've done it on primates, let's just do it on puppies just because we like to torture puppies, right? That's where these guys are, frankly. But it's not just Wuhan, said Justin Goodman, vice president of the White Coat Waste Project. He said Fauci's budget has ballooned over $6 billion in taxpayer funding annually, and at least half of it is being wasted on more questionable animal experimentation, like these deadly unnecessary beagle tests and other maximum pain experiments. But, of course, you know, we can all get upset, right, about the baby whales and the baby seals and the baby puppies. But we don't really seem to care about the baby humans. And what Fauci is doing to children is far, far worse. Far worse. I mean, you can make some arguments for the efficacy, for the importance of doing animal testing before you test it on humans. Of course, you know, that's what we're doing now is just testing on. We're the lab rats. Right? But you should try to keep that to a minimum is the point. It's already been done even on monkeys, which are much closer than the beagles. To humans in terms of their physiology and the types of responses that they're going to have. But the university now has admitted, University of Pittsburgh has now admitted that they harvested kidneys from unborn babies while their hearts were still beating. Is this shocking enough? Do you care? Would you care if he took the organs out of baby puppies while their heart was still beating? But people don't care that he's doing this. This is just the latest evidence of the ghouls at the FDA, at the NIH, these Joseph Mengele experimenters who are buying fresh, not frozen body parts. And what that means is that for money, Planned Parenthood and the University of Pittsburgh will take live babies. Because if they kill them, they could damage these organs, and they want these things fresh, not frozen. That's the specifications. University of Pittsburgh may have inadvertently provided more evidence this week that aborted babies may be born alive and left to die so their organs may be used for scientific research. This is because of the trial of the Center for Medical Progress. Judicial Watch is representing them there. Now, again, I'll just review quickly. These are the people who set up the undercover investigation because you'd already had Congress saying, we think that there's trafficking in body parts being done by Planned Parenthood. So they said, well, let's set up an organization and we'll contact Planned Parenthood people and say, we want to buy baby organs and we'll talk, you know, get them to start talking about what is required and what they want. As one lady said, well, I want a Lamborghini. That's what I'm looking for. And when they recorded that stuff, as shocking as it was, what was even more shocking was that nothing happened to stop it down. You know, you had the Republicans talk about it a little bit, but did they do anything? No. They had control of the Senate. They had control of the presidency. Did they do anything to stop it? No. But what the Democrats did with Kamala Harris, she took the lead as Attorney General for California. She came after the people who did the investigation. Said you recorded without their permission. That's what you do in an investigation. And so she came after them. She started prosecuting them. Then she ran for and became senator from California. And she was replaced by Javier Becerra. Now she's vice president. Javier Becerra is now the Biden appointee for HHS. But as the Center for Medical Progress is being persecuted, and that's what this is not a prosecution, this is a persecution, as they're being persecuted for exposing murder for hire, as they're going through this ordeal, God is using this to show the crimes of these people. That's how God works. These people are going through a difficult period of time, but because of their suffering, it is exposing this. Here's what's been exposed. They said through a Freedom of Information request with HHS, boy, that must have hurt Javier Becerra, right? he's got to turn over. These people he's been persecuting, he's got to turn over information that shows what monsters they were trying to expose. people like Fauci, people like the FDA. University of Pittsburgh got at least $2.7 million in federal taxes over 5 years, the past 5 years, to become a tissue hub, is what they call it, a tissue hub for aborted baby body parts for scientific research. Pitt is now admitting to the news media that the aborted babies were still alive at the time their kidneys were cut out for the NIH's grant money, for Fauci's grant money, says David DeLeiden. Because remember, they got to have these fresh, not frozen. And they don't want to have any physical tearing of these organs. They don't want to have the organs poisoned, because that's what they would do in some circumstances to induce an abortion. A labor induction abortion typically involves injecting digoxin or another poison into the unborn baby's heart to kill him or her, and then to induce labor so that the mother gives birth to a dead baby's body. This is often used in later abortions, second and third trimester abortions. But they don't want to use digoxin in this because they want fresh, not poisoned organs, not frozen, not poisoned. So what they do is they induce the labor without the digoxin. Research indicates that up to 50% of labor induction abortions without digoxin result in an infant born alive. So they point out, David DeLeiden says, Pitt's grant application advertised this to the federal government, that labor induction abortions where the baby is pushed out of the mother whole would be used to obtain the tissue. The plain meaning of this grant application in the University of Pittsburgh's statement explains that Pitt and Planned Parenthood abortion providers responsible for its quote-unquote research are allowing babies some of the age of viability to be delivered alive and then killing them by cutting out their kidneys and other organs. Collecting fetal tissue for over 10 years, said the university to the federal government, including liver, heart, gonads, legs, brain, genitourinary tissues, I don't know what that is, including kidneys, ureters, and bladders. That's how they advertise their expertise. Yes, we have 10 years' experience of murdering babies for body parts. The information comes from a study that the University of Pittsburgh researchers published in September 2020 in the journal Scientific Reports. It describes how scientists used scalps from aborted babies to create humanized mice and rats to study the human immune system. Who would they be doing that for? Oh, well, that would be Fauci himself, right? By the way, Manhattan Planned Parenthood, it now comes out, has had 32 emergency ambulance transports in just the last 5 years. So you think about that. That's in 5 years. That's 60 months. And in 60 months, they've had 32 emergency ambulance transports. In other words, a little over one every other month. One every 2 months. And when the information came out about Kermit Gosnell, he was convicted of murdering two babies and and also the death of a woman of color, an illegal alien, as you know, she checks all the intersectionality boxes, but the left, I guess, doesn't really care about that. But she was having an abortion. It ran into complications like this, but in his filthy little clinic, they couldn't get the gurney through the doors, and that delayed things considerably and was the cause of her death, ultimately. But he also was convicted of murdering two full-term babies and being born alive and then murdering them. Why aren't we seeing any murder convictions for Fauci, for the FDA, for the NIH, for the University of Pittsburgh? Well, for the same reason that you do not question Boston University about the medical kidnapping of a young teenager as they were killing her for their medical experiments, for a research paper, if you will. In the wake of what happened with Kermit Gosnell, you had some states, like Texas, came up, crafted some legislation, and said, well, first of all, you're going to have to be, you have to make arrangements so in case something like this happens, and you're also going to have egress into the clinic so that they can easily get a gurney through the hallways, through the doorways as needed to get everybody out. The Democrats here in Texas went absolutely crazy. They were led by Abortion Barbie. I can't even remember her real name now. She doesn't deserve a real name. Talking about how they had to stop this. And, of course, as there were demonstrations outside while they were pushing through the legislation, the Democrats were out there screaming at the Christians, "Hail Satan." And it was the courts who saved all of that. And the idea that the courts are supreme, that the Ninth and Tenth Amendment don't apply anymore in the Constitution. So no matter what happens at the state level, you can have a single federal judge somewhere shut this down. But there's a more effective way to kill babies, really. They've come up with it. It's called the Trump shot. Just give them a Trump shot, or give the mommy a Trump shot. You know, we've had almost 1,200 babies die of miscarriage after their moms had the Trump shot. But here's a 2-year-old baby who dies a week after the second COVID shot in the Pfizer trials. But, of course, the CDC has now pulled the report, and they're not going to stop the vaccines. No matter what happens, you know, they would run animal trials on other things, and they would stop it if they had negative side effects, but not this vaccine. Kill a 2-year-old, we don't care. Have 1,200 abortions, we don't care. As Babylon Bee points out, you know, we've had the CDC put on under Trump. They extended their power in a power grab to say that you can't have any evictions from people who are behind in their rent, people who are behind in their mortgage. No, we're going to put an eviction moratorium on there. The CDC said that. Let me tell you, there is no authority for the president to say that. There's no authority for the Supreme Court to say that. There's no authority for state governments to say that either, or local governments. So how does the CDC get that authority? Well, it's given to them by people like Trump, people like Biden, people like Kavanaugh at the Supreme Court have all caved into this. And, of course, it happened under Trump. It was extended under Trump. It's been extended now 3 times under Biden. And Babylon Bee says, Biden clarifies that the forced eviction moratorium will not apply to unborn babies. That's right. We have a different way to evict them. Give mom the shot. Finally, before we take a break, just as food for thought, church buildings are the one thing that's not seeing a construction boom. That tells you the state of America, doesn't it? Just not interested in knowing about God. So afraid of death, but uninterested in the one who has the keys to eternal life. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, and we're back. And Travis, I've got... something, the Gen 6 thing is not firing. Can you correct that for me, please? So we will go on to something else here. Let's talk a little bit about toxic medicine And over the weekend, we have had the Obama variant that has come out, and also the Sturgis rally. And it was kind of interesting to watch people on both sides of this political issue. This is not medical science. This is politics. This is about control. And it's very interesting to watch them fight each other over this issue. And I just kind of sat on the sidelines for that one. I didn't get involved in it. When you talk about what is happening with vaccines, everybody likes to trot out their stories about somebody who took a vaccine and died immediately, or somebody who didn't get the vaccine and then is dying in hospital as they're doing the equivalent of leeching, you know, like they did to George Washington, taking out about 80% of his blood, killing him. You know, George Washington rode around the farm on a cold day on horseback, he comes back, he gets a severe cold. They call in the doctors, and over a couple of days, the doctors wisely extracted about 80% of his blood. And in the meantime, they gave him mercury treatments. They did some very painful things to him as well. They killed him. What we're seeing right now in the hospitals, I have absolutely no doubt about it, is medical malpractice. And yet you have these competing narratives that are out there. Mainstream media, this gets reported by the Drudge Report, talks about a Florida radio host, 65 years old, who blasted Fauci. They said he dies from COVID, but he texted his friends and pals during his dying days, urging them to get the shots. Even though he was cynical and critical of Fauci and the shots, now he's learned his lesson, regrets, and of course, you're all going to regret it, says mainstream media and the Drudge Report. He said, why take a vax promoted by people who lied to you all along about masks, where the virus came from, and the death toll? And as the Sun, who's put this story out, this is the one that was picked up by Drudge, the Sun says, well, he didn't provide any additional context or clarification. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Did he not know why the mRNA vaccine was a bad idea, other than the fact that these people have given you conflicting medical advice about everything? I mean, I've talked at length about this, you know, if you listen to this program on a daily basis, for the last 512 days. Actually, I was talking about, not just about the vaccines that amount of time, but I was talking about the lockdown for 2 months before that. So maybe, you know, he's just taking the conservative talking points. Maybe he didn't really know anything about why you shouldn't get the vaccine, because I can't imagine if he'd actually done his research, if he knew the history of Fauci, if he knew the history of the CDC, if he knew how they had pushed the flu vaccines and lied with their statistics to get people to do it, he would have seen the same pattern that we're seeing here. If he had paid any attention to the climate change narrative, the global warming narrative, or the one before that, the we're all going to freeze. That was the first 8 years, from 1970 to about 1978. It was going to be a new ice age. If you look at all of those things and you see that what they wanted to do was what they did last year, that it was all part of the 2030 agenda, just like universal basic income, mass unemployment, dependency, you'll own nothing, all of the Great Reset, everything. It's been talked about now for decades. This didn't just start, really, with Davos. Davos just got to the point of hubris where they were putting it out there. Once, about 2015, when the UN decided on an end date of 2030, both they and Davos started openly bragging about it, thinking that there's nothing that we can do. Well, there's plenty that we can do. The only question is, will we do it? Will we push back on this? Nevertheless, so he's saying, why take a vaccine promoted by people that you can't trust? And then he writes another one. Says, vaccine, bogus, bull, BS. Two peeps I know got vaxxed and now have corona, hospitalized and critical. Thank you, Moderna, for nothing. And they said that he'd been suffering from respiratory illness. They say that he tested positive for COVID, so they call it COVID. He had a respiratory illness for 3 weeks before his death. Was he taking any ivermectin? Did he know about that? Did he take HCQ? Did he take any of the other things that have been very effective? Or did he take remdesivir, because that's the standard of care? Did he go the remdesivir and ventilator route? You know, the bleeding and mercury route? Because that's how they make their money, right? Having contracted the deadly virus, he changed his mind and texted friends urging them to get the vaccine. One friend said, "He is the reason I got the shot, the Trump shot. Get it," he told me. "This virus is no joke," he said. "I wish I had gotten it." Well, let me tell you, it's the medical treatment that is a joke. You know, I had a lot of people contact me over the weekend saying, "Well, you got to say that there's no virus. Or you got to say that there is no virus." Yeah, I'm really upset that you won't say there's no virus. Upset that I talked about the fact that there's other things we need to be focused on. Let me tell you, the pandemic, as I said from the very beginning, I said the pandemic you need to be worried about is the political authoritarian pandemic of locking us down. Because once they lock us down, it's going to be really hard, if not impossible, to get this back. I said that before Trump did the lockdown, financially incentivizing it, giving the legal cover to these governors to do it as well. And so I said, that's the real China virus, what they have modeled for everybody. And I said, look at this nonsense. Look at these people falling down the street. I said, you know that's fake. Do you think that the Chinese hospitals are always crowded in a chaotic situation? I've been to China. That's exactly what the typical situation is there. And I showed people how in New York they were talking about overcrowded hospitals. They have people in the hallways and so forth and so on. And I showed the articles from 3 years earlier. The same hospitals were saying the same thing 3 years before. And it was in the same newspapers, pushing for funds, pushing for money. Because, you know, most hospitals are funded as county entities. And even if you're a private hospital, you have to, before you can buy, probably not necessary for your expansion. I don't know. We're talking about New York here. But I know back in North Carolina, if you were a private hospital and you wanted to buy an MRI machine, you had to get what's called a certificate of need, which means permission from your competitors, the county and the county hospital. You know, county's got their own county hospitals. And the county would have to say, yeah, we need an MRI machine, and we'll allow you to do it. If they said, we've already got enough MRI machines, and we don't want you competing with us, then you wouldn't get your certificate of need, and you couldn't expand into that particular area. Do you see how much our health care is already under government control? I know this because I was fighting Hillary Clinton's health care takeover attempts back in the early 90s, 93 and on. As a matter of fact, we had a doctor who was very active in the Libertarian Party because of that very reason. But anyway, yeah, this is financially incentivized medical malpractice. But this guy worked for CBS Radio in West Palm Beach. And when I saw that, I said to Karen, I said, just how anti-vax was this guy? Do you think that I would last a day on CBS Radio in West Palm Beach? I mean, I should call him up and say, I understand you got a vacancy. Would you, just for laughs, they would probably cut my feed in the middle of the first broadcast. So you can say things, well, I don't think the Fauci's trustworthy, and you can play to the base. There's a lot of different things that you can say if you dance around it. Of course, Joe Rogan can now say that it's trending towards a dictatorship. 512 days after the dictatorship began. It's safe for him to say it because the Spotify executives have got tens of millions of dollars tied up in Joe Rogan. And no matter how irritated the employees get with Joe Rogan, they're going to make sure that stays there. But of course, they'll throw me to the wolves. They'll throw me to the cancel mob at Spotify over and over again. So that's one case. So here's a guy. He didn't, you know, he died, and oh, if only I'd gotten the vaccine. And that's everywhere. Drudge Report, everybody's got this story. But then you'll find in the corners of the internet another 65-year-old. And this is not being put out there by mainstream media. Nobody's linking, Drudge Report's not linking to this. It's exactly the same thing, but in reverse. This is a guy, Michael Mitchell. Also 65 years old, just like this radio host. By the way, you look at the radio host, and he had some major comorbidities in terms of at least weight. If he's that heavy and 65 years old, I wouldn't be surprised if he had cardiac and diabetic issues as well. So he had some major issues. Now, this guy, I don't know what kind of shape he's in right now, Well, he's dead right now, but before he died, 65-year-old Braveheart actor who had been a bodybuilder. He had been a former Mr. Universe. They had had him on Braveheart, maybe as an extra or something. I don't know if what role he had. I didn't investigate it. Living in Turkey now. And so he just took a whole bunch of shots and said, I'm perfectly happy to be a guinea pig for all of this stuff. For my fellow man, I will do it. And he talked about it being an experimental vaccine. First, he went all in on the Chinese vaccine because outside of the United States, Russia, and Western Europe, the rest of the world is pretty much using the China vaccine, the Sinovac, they call it. And again, people say, don't call it a vaccine. I'm reading the news, so they keep calling it a vaccine. We know it's a genetic code injection. We know it's genetic modification. We know that this isn't anything like any other vaccine. And I'll just say it again. I always say this when I start talking about the vaccines. With other vaccines, the whole idea was to train your immune system, to train it by giving you something that was weakened or dead. That's not happening with this. What they're doing with this is they're training your body. They're making your body, not your immune system. They're training the mRNA reprograms your body to manufacture the protein spikes, which are the most deadly aspect of this. And so it's actually making you manufacture the most toxic part of this. It's not giving you a dead or weakened version of whatever the pathogen is. So the whole basic idea, the basic theory behind vaccines doesn't even apply to this. So yeah, this is not a vaccine. It's a genetic code injection to make your body manufacture something that is extremely harmful, that is distributed throughout your body, as the information we saw in Japan showed that was leaked out of there. The biodistribution spreads everywhere. It accumulates in your organs. It does a great deal of harm to your cardiovascular system, your heart. It crosses the blood-brain barrier. It damages your lungs. It accumulates in your ovaries. This is not a vaccine. Anyway, they got the second injection on March the 20th. He said he didn't have any adverse effects. He was bragging about it on social media all the time. But he and a friend wondered if they would still be allowed to travel internationally with just a Chinese vaccine. And so, and by the way, these people who have this is a COVIDblog.com. They were able to grab stuff from his Facebook page before it was all purged. They eventually did purge it. Mr. Mitchell's entire Facebook purge now has been scrubbed of all posts except his wedding announcement from 2013. But they have, in this article, you can see all the things that he talked about. Trolling people, telling them they had to wear the mask, talking about anybody that didn't wear the mask, didn't social distance, they were dimwits, they were Charlie Browns. And he was going to save the world by taking all the experimental injections. And then he posted a fully vaccinated banner on his profile photo. And he even trolled other people who had questioned the vaccine and refused to take it. He put up a picture of a doctor, the article coming from the Daily Star in the UK, another handmaid of the globalist vaccine people, Bojo and these others in the UK. Daily Star says, doctor dies of COVID weeks after saying the vaccine is completely unnecessary. And he's got a sign up, withdraw the abortion bill and repent. This guy probably had some ethical issues about this vaccine. That's why he refused to do it as well. So Michael Mitchell trolled him, mocked him for dying. And then even as he and another guy were saying, well, you know, this Sinovac, is that going to be our ticket to be able to travel places? It did get approved June the 2nd by the WHO. But they still weren't certain that various governments would allow them to travel. So he announced on July 16th that he got the third jab, this time a Pfizer vaccine. And he said, I'm happy to be a guinea pig. He said, well, that's my third jab today. Proud to be a part of this experiment to save lives. 5 days later, he posted a lengthy update trying to justify his own behavior. The next day, they found him dead on the floor. Heart attack. VAERS alert. two new reports of teen deaths. It's not just the 65-year-olds who are dying. We've had two teen deaths, as now the deaths have exceeded 12,000 reported. I had as I mentioned it last week, I said, you know, this is truly about the money, right? And I said, a good example of this is, I said, going back to spring of 2018, so I had a listener ask me, he said, can you give me the references for those? And I looked them up. And yeah, I was right. I did remember the time accurately. It was actually April 2018. It was covered by Ars Technica. It was covered by a lot of different outlets at the time, but you know, it was not covered by CNN, Fox, MSNBC, New York Times, Washington Post, any of the establishment media. None of them covered it. BBC, nobody. It was a CNBC story that showed up for a short period of time, and then it disappeared. I remembered it. It was vividly etched in my mind when I saw it. I was like, wow, this is a smoking gun about big pharmaceutical companies back in 2018. I've talked about it many times. That was on MarketWatch. I can still see the headlines and the banner there. But when I went back and looked at it, it's like, well, the original source of this was published by CNBC. A lot of people picked it up from that. It was Goldman Sachs that noted in a report, April the 10th, 2018, they said, we do not want to cure disease. And here's what's even more interesting, why I'm talking about this now in more detail after I sent these articles to him. It's like there's one detail that I really hadn't focused on that much. I did when it first came out. The report was called The Genome Revolution. And so they were talking about genetic modification as a path to new drugs back in 2018. And so Goldman Sachs, who's all about money, right?
Show me the money!
That's right, show me the money. So they're saying to the big pharmaceutical companies and to Gilead, these friends of Fauci, you know, it's Gilead, Remdesivir, I talked about that last week. Talked about that on Friday. How now the studies have come out showing just how bad these clinical studies for Remdesivir were, how harmful they were, and how ineffective they were. And yet Fauci got those taken down off the World Health Organization, and he published his own studies and said, it doesn't help anybody get better, but, you know, if somebody survived 30% faster. So it's now the standard of care, because it's like $3,100 for a course versus $3 or less for something like ivermectin or HCQ that works. And it's got a lot of downsides, no therapeutic capacity at all. So Goldman Sachs said at the time, they said, well, you know, we have this new genome revolution that's coming, and we're going to be able to go in and we might be able to cure diseases by doing genetic modification. Now, whether or not that's true and whether or not you want to take that risk, their point on it was, you know, if this actually works, we could wind up curing diseases. We don't want to do that. We don't want to cure diseases. They said the potential to deliver a one-shot cure is one of the most attractive aspects of gene therapy, genetic modification, genetically engineered cell therapy, and gene editing. However, such treatments offer a very different outlook with regard to recurring revenue versus chronic therapy. And we talk about a chronic condition. That's something that never goes away. You can kind of treat it, but it never goes away. That's what we want to make money, says Goldman Sachs. They said, while this proposition carries tremendous value for patients, it could represent a challenge for our sustained cash flow. You see what their motivation is? We could cure disease, but we don't want to do that. We want people to suffer so we can make money. And, you know, maybe now when you look at the vaccine, quote unquote, the jab, this genetic modification jab, perhaps they're looking at this as creating a long revenue stream of conditions that will evolve over time, right? So it's not just the billions, tens of billions of dollars that they're making giving the shot, but it's the downstream revenue of the different conditions that they can create. That's another perhaps way that they're looking at this. So at the time, they were specifically talking about a treatment for hepatitis C. They said, you know, it peaked at $12.5 billion in 2015. Gilead had a cure for hepatitis C. They made $12.5 billion in 2015. But then they said, by 2018, they said it's now down to just $4 billion. That just isn't enough, right? I mean, just like the person asked David Rockefeller, how much money is enough? And he said, always just a little bit more. Because it's an addiction to these people. They can never have enough. They love money. It's power to them. It's domination to them. It's a drug to them. And the root of all evil is a love of money. And you look at how evil this is. Goldman Sachs lecturing the pharmaceutical companies, don't find cures. That's not a sustainable cash flow for us. Keep the people suffering with chronic disease. That's how we make our money. So yeah, it's down to only $4 billion. They said Gilead is a case in point. This is quoting from the Goldman Sachs report. Gilead is a case in point where the success of its hepatitis C franchise has gradually exhausted the available pool of treatable patients because it cured them. They said in the case of infectious diseases such as hepatitis C, curing existing patients also decreases the number of carriers able to transmit the virus to new patients. Thus, the pool also declines. Now, when you look at what's happening with the vaccine, and you look at the fact, well, yeah, it's going to stop this, and you're not going to be able to transmit it. Now, we got a bombshell admission from Walensky at the CDC saying we can no longer say that the vaccine stops transmission. I'll play that for you coming up. And that's an admission that they don't have any justification to force mandates on other people. She says in this statement that she had yesterday on the Sunday talking shows, she says, well, it's perfect. It helps the people that are vaccinated. Absolutely. It works wonders, right? It's totally effective for the people who get it. But it does not stop transmission of the disease. Now, the people saying that you and I have to be compelled to take the vaccine, the justification for it from Paul Offit was that, well, the vaccines are not perfect. But what it does do is it stops transmission. So that's why you are going to be forced to take it and must be forced to take it. Because even though I've gotten my vaccine, I'm still vulnerable because you, the unvaccinated, can push this out. Now, she just made Paul Offit a liar. Well, Paul Offit made himself a liar a long time ago pushing these vaccines. And it's not just these Trump shots. He was pushing other vaccines before that. So she just basically destroyed the case for mandates because if your shot works, you're protected. And it's none of your business what I do because it's my risk. I get to determine my risks for life. You don't. Anyway, they go through this, and if they're saying, you know, this is a problem because it cures patients, and then once the patients are cured, then the infectious disease is not spreading to other people. Why is that? Because you have you've actually cured it. So that also tells us that this whole thing about curing COVID, getting your body trained, because the vaccines, no vaccine has ever been a therapeutic, is simply there to train your immune system. That's all it does. And if it doesn't train your immune system, then you're going to get it and you're going to pass it on to other people. And that's what they're saying. They said, unfortunately, you know, this hepatitis C drug from Gilead actually works. So it's going to reduce the pool of people that are out there. And where an incident pool remains stable, for example, as in cancer, we like cancer because cancer is a good revenue stream, right? That's why they shut down so many alternative therapies for cancer, because they want to treat cancer, not cure cancer. How many times have we heard this is why when I saw this article, it was like, boom, and it just etched itself into my memory. Because for years, we've been saying they don't want to cure cancer. They want to treat cancer and make lots of money in it. And they admitted it here. They even referenced that in the text of their Goldman Sachs report. Where an incident pool remains stable, for example, in cancer, the potential for a cure poses less risk to the sustainability of a franchise. It's all about the money. All about the money. These people are merchants of death. All they care about is money. They will let you suffer. They will let you die. They will give you horrendous treatments that are ineffective but very expensive. This is what the pharmaceutical industry has always been. That's why I am opposed to all of these shots, not just the Trump shots, the others as well. I know where these people are coming from. I know that unlike any other industry, they have legal immunity. They are killers. They are hired killers. And who hired him? Well, it's Trump, right? Gave him lots of money. Incentivized hospitals to do malpractice as well. A leaked document. We got yet another leaked document showing how Pfizer was shaking down entire countries. You know, they're blackmailing us on an individual level, saying, you're going to stay locked down in your house and you're not going to go anywhere. But they did that to countries as well. Countries in Latin America, third world countries, poor countries like Albania, the Dominican Republic, Argentina, Brazil, others are talking about how Pfizer came to them and shook them down. And this is being put out by the pharmaceutical industry itself, Stat News, and other pharmaceutical publications. Back in February, I told you about the Stat News article. It's February the 23rd this year. Pfizer has been accused of bullying Latin American governments during negotiations to acquire its COVID-19 vaccine. The company has asked some countries to put up sovereign assets, embassy buildings, military bases, as a guarantee against the cost of any future legal cases, according to the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. In the case of one Latin American country, demands made led to a three-month delay and the vaccine deal being reached. For Argentina and Brazil, no deals were agreed to at all with Pfizer. And so what we see happening, again, this was 6 months ago, nearly. These people are nothing other than a bunch of gangsters. In the event that a drug or other treatment comes out that can prevent, treat, or cure COVID-19, the agreement stands, and the country must still follow through with their vaccine order. While COVID-19 vaccines are free to receive in the U.S., they're being paid for by taxpayer dollars at the rate of $19.50, whereas in the Dominican Republic, they're getting it for $12. In Europe, they're getting it for under $15, but we paid just about $20 because Trump did such a great deal with all of this. Yeah, that mafia don. So, purchasers of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine must also acknowledge that the efficacy as well as the safety of this is unknown. But I thought that we heard from Fauci. Yeah, it's great. We know that it's 100% safe and effective. They said in their documents that it was unknown. And that is the reality. That is reality. And now we've got another case that is coming out. Again, this was 6 months ago. Now we have some new documents from some other countries. We have, again, as I mentioned, Albania and the Dominican Republic. We have now seen the terms from them because you had somebody, they were not protected. And so somebody got in there, hacked that stuff, and now has revealed it. And so what are we seeing? We're seeing that they're admitting that they're not safe, they're not effective, but you are going to protect us against all liability, or we will not give the vaccine to your country and you'll be locked down. Like I said, that's the same kind of ransom that they're holding the gun to our heads individually. They're doing that to countries as well, saying everybody in your country, if you don't get the vaccine, everybody in your country is going to be locked into your country. You won't be able to travel anywhere. You don't want that to happen, do you? You don't want to be isolated, do you? You don't want your entire country locked down. Well, I've got the key right here. This is extortion. It's blackmail. It's organized crime. And, of course, that's why Trump would be involved in it, because he's always been a part of the mob. In New York and everywhere else, a casino don. Pharmaceutical companies shouldn't be using their power to limit life-saving vaccines, said a professor, Lawrence Gostin, who actually believes in these Trump shots. And he's upset that they're extorting people. But, of course, the people that got extorted the most are us. We paid for the development of these things. We bought tremendous numbers of them, and we paid more than anybody else on the planet. for these vaccines. Again, Europe, $14.50. We pay $19.50. Are we winning yet, Trump? Protection against liability shouldn't be used as a sword of Damocles hanging over the heads of desperate countries with a desperate population, said the World Health Organization official. They're making you an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah, we got Fauci and the World Health Organization going to lock these people down. and they're going to have to come to us. I got an offer you can't refuse. You can't leave your country unless you get our vaccine, and you're going to keep us from having any risk whatsoever. You will assume all risks. You will pay all fees, right?
Most governments are offering indemnity, exemption from legal liability, to the vaccine manufacturers they're buying from. This means that a citizen who suffers any adverse effects from being vaccinated cannot file a claim against the manufacturer, the corporation. If you're successful in getting any compensation, it will be paid for by the government. What do we call that? We call that socializing the costs and privatizing the profits. I call it corruption. I call it what it is, Trump. So they said the terms of many of these are kept secret. They signed an NDA that will keep all these terms secret for 10 years. Let's see, that was done last year. So what year would that be? 2030, the year that they expect that they're going to have complete control over everything. 2030. It's okay. They can let us know how they took control then. But we're not supposed to know before then. The government officials from Argentina and the unnamed country who spoke to the Bureau felt that Pfizer's demands went beyond those of other vaccine companies and beyond those of COVAX, an organization created to ensure low-income countries can have access to the Trump shots. Pfizer had asked for additional indemnity from civil cases, meaning that the company could not be held liable for any rare adverse effects, they said. Rare. For its own acts of negligence or for fraud or for malice. If Pfizer sent the wrong vaccines or if they were negligent during the manufacturing process. And that's what I pointed out. That's what made these countries, Argentina and Brazil, push back against this and said, well, I understand that they're rushing this through. I understand that it's experimental. I understand that they haven't had time to test it. But if they make manufacturing errors or things like that that are negligent, they should be held accountable. They said, no. Furthermore, when you look at their demands that they have things be set aside for them, that they have as pledge, national assets such as embassy buildings and military bases. And they also, as part of that report, they said that they required money to be held in foreign bank accounts in Switzerland. Does that sound like these people are knowing criminals, that they know that they're committing fraud, that they know that there's a good chance they're going to be found out and that the mob is going to come after them? Let me tell you, if you want to understand why they're so desperate to shut down any information that you missed, calling it misinformation. If you want to understand why they are working so hard to shut everything down, it's because if Fauci and Pfizer and Trump and the rest of the people, if once people find out what they have done, there isn't going to be anywhere on earth that these people can hide. The mobs will hunt them down rightfully and make them answer for justice. They're mass murderers. These people are at the level of the Nazis and the Japanese war criminals that were brought over here for Operation Paperclip. And that's why we have this coming out of America now. We became the Nazis. We became Joseph Mengele. We became these Japanese war criminals. The lower ones were executed in show trials. But the guys who really knew what was going on became the leaders in our bioweapons programs at Fort Detrick and other places. We became the Nazis. We became what we fought after World War II. Some liability protection is warranted, but certainly not for fraud, for gross negligence, for mismanagement, for failure to follow good manufacturing practices, said Gostin, the guy with the WHO. He said, companies have no right to ask for indemnity for these things. And yet, if you look at this, isn't that the thing that would be the most obvious red flag to anybody who thinks? It's amazing to me to watch the left, first of all, embrace these Trump shots like they are eternal life. And then secondly, to go to bat for these gigantic corporations. It's just mind-boggling to see the left that always said the thing that mattered most to them was free speech, and now they've become the biggest censors. The things that they hated was anybody making a profit, and yet you look at the obscene profits, the obscene corruption, the fact that it was being done under Trump, and they brush all of that aside and lovingly embrace it and worship it, idolize it. I mean, this is the power of groupthink. It's the power of government propaganda. It's the power of censorship to turn these people on the left against everything they've always hated. And conversely, doing the same thing on the right, getting the people who follow Trump to excuse the things that he has done, even still applauding this guy, still hanging on every word that he has to say, hoping that he's going to be reinstated as president, and yet still afraid to take these vaccines. But they love Trump, still love Trump. And it's because you've got the right-wing media doing the same kind of propaganda on that side with that crowd. To watch both the left and the right completely ignore their principles and to just follow into this group mindset is absolutely amazing. And it is frightening to see how easily the crowds can be manipulated, even both polar extremes. And the opinion of Mark Eccleston Turner, a lecturer in global health, he said, it looks like Pfizer is trying to eke out as much profit and risk at every juncture with this vaccine development and with this vaccine rollout. Now, the vaccine development has been heavily subsidized already, and there's very minimal risk for the manufacturer involved here. But again, who did that? That was Trump. And it's never enough. Never enough. And they know. They know that what they're doing is criminal. Officials said, 5 years in the future, when these confidentiality agreements are over, you'll learn what really happened in these negotiations. Well, for most of them, it's 10 years in the future. These articles came out several months ago, but now, you know, we have the new ones coming out, and this is from Children's Health Defense. Albania, Dominican Republic, they said the alleged indemnification agreement between Pfizer and Albania was originally posted in snippets on Twitter, but Twitter has now marked them as unavailable. See, Twitter is shutting down these indemnification agreements. Yeah, that's the censorship that happens here. These agreements are confidential, but luckily one country did not protect the contract document well enough, so I managed to get a hold of a copy of it, said the person who posted it. If you're wondering why ivermectin was suppressed, he wrote, well, it's because the agreement that countries had with Pfizer does not allow them to escape their contract. It states that even if a drug will be found to treat COVID-19, the contract cannot be voided. So these people, these governments, even if they're not in on the Bilderberg crowd and the rest of this stuff, they've now committed massive financial stake into these vaccines, and they need to use them. Even if Pfizer fails to deliver the vaccine doses within their estimated delivery period, the purchaser may not cancel the order, according to the terms. Look at this. Look at how they held a gun to their heads. Again, made them an offer they couldn't refuse. Further, Pfizer can make adjustments to the number of contracted doses and to their delivery schedule, quote, based on principles to be determined by Pfizer. And the country buying the vaccines must, quote, agree to any revision. So they're completely in control, just like the internet companies are completely in control of the terms of service, and they can rewrite that at any given point, and you will agree to those terms of service. It doesn't matter if the vaccines were delivered severely late. It doesn't matter if they were delivered even to the point where they're no longer needed. So this is another reason why they've got to keep the thing going. Under no circumstances will Pfizer be subject to or liable for any late penalties. As you might suspect, the contract also forbids returns under any circumstances. While COVID-19 vaccines are free to receive in the U.S., writes Children's Health Defense Fund, as I point out, the EU is only paying $14.70 per shot. We pay $19.50. Albania pays $12. Good deal. Good deal, Donald. Boy, you really are a winner when it comes to negotiating, aren't you? You did such a good job negotiating with the Democrats, you know, playing 4D chess and all that, like Alex said.
Boy, he's just a master at all that, isn't he? He's a master manipulator of his own people, not of the opposition. He didn't cut a deal for us. He cut a deal under the table with these vaccine companies. Hey, we'll pay you 33% more than Europe. How about that? And we'll fund the development for you as well. And we'll deliver it with our military. How about that? And then I'll kick in a $250 million advertising budget just with the Ad Council. All of that done by Trump for these vaccines. Isn't that wonderful? Don't you want to have him back? U.S. taxpayers got screwed by Pfizer, says the guy who released this information. Probably also Israel. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Israel screwed not only the Israeli taxpayers, but they screw the American taxpayers all the time as well. Israel is screwing everybody. Pfizer makes a point to note that countries have no right to withhold payment to the company for any reason. The purchasers of Pfizer's vaccine must also acknowledge two facts that have largely been brushed under the rug. Again, both the efficacy and the risks are unknown. In other words, whether it works and whether it's safe, we don't know. We don't know. You will hold us harmless for this. As a purchaser in the contract, Section 5.5, purchaser further acknowledges that the long-term effects and the efficacy of the vaccine are not currently known, and that there may be adverse effects of the vaccine that are not currently known. Purchaser hereby agrees to indemnify, defend, hold harmless Pfizer, each of their affiliates, contractors, subcontractors, licensors, licensees, sublicensees, distributors, contract manufacturers, on and on. I mean, it lists everything. Clinical researchers, third parties. Hold them harmless from and against any and all suits, claims, actions, demands, losses, damages, liabilities, settlements, penalties, fines, costs, expenses, including without limitation, reasonable attorney's fees and other expenses of investigation or litigation arising out of or relating to or resulting from the vaccine, the Trump shot. And keep this confidential for 10 years. Buried in the March 17th, 2020 Federal Register. Now, this is 4 days after the Friday the 13th that I marked time from. 512 days now. That was the executive order, national state of emergency, kicking off the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, things that states had legislated, but most importantly, bribing hospitals, bribing governors with money. That's the way Washington gets its way. Gives you massive amounts of money, or if you're getting the money, you do now this next thing, or we take the money back. Now, 4 days later, March the 17th, in the Federal Register, they created a new vaccine court. Now, the history of this, remember we had the 1986 Act. Watch the one done by Dr. Wakefield, a movie called the 1980, it says 1984, the Act, and he crosses it out and puts a six there. It's a dramatization that talks about this core issue, the fact that Fauci, under Reagan, gave them legal immunity. And then in 2005, under the George W. Bush administration, after they began plotting and planning and practicing with Dark Winter 2 months before 9/11, the anthrax attack a week later, and then 2 months later they pushed out the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, and they did these simulations, first one Dark Winter 2 months before 9/11. They did these simulations every year, preparing exactly for this, preparing themselves, practicing how they were going to lock everything down with draconian measures, rush a vaccine through, and if you didn't do that, everybody died in the simulation. So they've been practicing this, and in 2005, they came up with a new immunity bill, if you will. I've talked about that before, but it was 4 days after Trump did the lockdown that the Trump administration created a new court. Now, here's how this thing works, right? The maximum payout you can receive, even with permanent disability or death, is $250,000 per person. And before you can get that, you have to exhaust all of your private insurance policies before they will even consider this. And the CICP also has a one-year statute of limitations. Now, why would they put that in there? Because, as I've talked about many times with the previous go that Fauci and Slawy had pushing out the Pandemrix vaccine, it is, prior to this, the best documented case of injury with a so-called vaccine. Those were the kids in Scandinavia who showed up first in children
And it showed up a year later, a year later. And because of that short time frame, it made it very hard for them to claim that they didn't have any responsibility for it. But it took a year for it to show up in kids. And so now what they did was they've made this a one-year statute of limitations just to cover themselves. The astonishing hubris of a global experimental vaccine, writes the co-founder of Wikipedia, Larry Sanger. He says, it is an objective, indisputable fact. Never in the history of the world has there been a global push to administer an experimental medicine to all of humanity, billions of us, at the same time. Imagine the hubris required to both carry this out and to propagandize the world to carry it out. That's exactly what it is. Just pure evil. Pride. Hubris. Hubris, you ask, what do you mean? He says, well, think about it. The COVID vaccines are experimental. I just read you, Pfizer says that, even though Fauci denies it. Fauci is a liar. He will look you in the face in the camera and lie to your face. Many experimental vaccines never make it out of the experimental phase. CNN made those points when Trump was president and wrongheadedly pushing for rapid approval of the COVID vaccines. But now it's all changed because Biden is in office. Now they've been baptized by the Democrats, and they're good. They're good now. Nothing changed except the occupant of the White House. Nothing changed about these experimental genetic code injections, except that now Biden is president. He said, you have to be willing to trust the welfare of billions of people, not just to the honesty of our leaders and our scientists, because things can go wrong for decent people. You've also got to trust their competence, and not just that, because competent people can make surprising, unforeseeable mistakes. You must also trust that we avoided the worst, that we dodged a bullet, that they actually succeeded in making something that is more or less safe. Of course, maybe they did. But what if we discover some horrifyingly high incidence of catastrophic side effects that do not show up for 2 or for 5 or for 10 years? Because that's typically what happens with these vaccines. You typically don't see the stuff show up for a long time. And, of course, there's a statute of limitations of 1 year. They're covered, they say. You know what? You can always go back and change the statute of limitations, can't you? I've said that many times about the pedophiles. We know that Washington does not want to do anything about pedophiles because they have kept in the statute of limitations of 3 years. But you could always change that. And when it gets changed, you know, the crime is the crime. What the statute of limitations says is that you can't prosecute somebody for this crime. If you change that statute of limitations, then you can go back and prosecute people that were outside the statute of limitations because the crime was still committed. You just remove the legislation that says that you can't go after people after a certain period of time. So we can still go after these people that push the vaccine. We just change that statute of limitations. Change the statute of limitations for compensation as well. Anyway, if a world leader, writes the co-founder of Wikipedia, if a world leader is willing to take such, by the way, he's been purged completely by these people. He has no connection with Wikipedia. Wikipedia has become something that he is absolutely abhors. He says, if a world leader is willing to take such gambles with all of humanity, what else are they prepared to do? Let's just put it very specifically. If Trump is willing to gamble with all of humanity because these are Trump's shots. These are the Trump shots that were sent around the world. So if Trump is willing to gamble with all of humanity, what else is Trump willing to do? What else is Boris Johnson willing to do? Or Macron? Or Emmanuel Macron or Merkel? Any of these people? What are they willing to do? Well, you know what they're willing to do. He says, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm an anti-global, all-at-once experimental vaxxer. And there's a big difference. Let me just say this. You know, anti-vaxxer has now become the term that they like to use, just as the AP has set up style rules in the past, saying you do not, if you want to get your articles published and pushed out by the Associated Press, you will not use the term pro-choice. You will only use the term anti-abortion rights. They select these terms to push their agenda. Selecting the labels and the terms gives them the high ground in a debate. And so they call us conspiracy theorists. They call us anti-vaxxers. Let's just call ourselves pro-choice. Let's call ourselves anti-coercion. Let's call ourselves supporters of informed consent or parental rights, but I like pro-choice. That kind of shows exactly where the lines are drawn in this. Moderna and Pfizer, by the way, you want to talk about the fact that they say, well, we don't know if these things are safe or effective. One of the reasons they don't know is because both Moderna and Pfizer stopped their clinical control groups. They didn't run the full test. They ran it for a short period of time. Now, you're supposed to run these control groups for 2 to 3 years minimum. And prior to this rodeo, you had a lot of scientists, and I remember it was Del Bigtree, ICANN, Decide. They put this stuff together. It was a meeting at the World Health Organization. You had scientists from all over the world saying, we're not running these trials long enough. It's taking longer than 2 to 3 years for long-term effects to show up for these vaccines, and we need to run it longer. So what did Trump do? He cut it down to 2 months. And they didn't even do it for 2 months because as they ran this thing out, the vaccine companies decided, you know, you've got a control group that's supposedly given a placebo. Of course, we found out later that some of these control groups, the placebo was a meningitis vaccine, which has its own issues. And so right there, you can say, well, you know, we got a lot of cases of Guillain-Barré or whatever, some of these other things that happened with the vaccine shots. We got a lot of cases of Guillain-Barré that showed up, but that showed up in the control group. So see, it just kind of washes out because they didn't give them a saline solution. They gave them a meningitis vaccine, the control group. But then for others, what they decided was, well, you know, we've got this control group and they're not exposed to this, but, you know, everybody is dying. Everybody all over the world is dying from COVID. So we're going to just break this protocol and we're going to give the control group the shot. So they just destroyed, they deliberately destroyed their experiment right there. Didn't even run it for the full 2 or 3 months. Purposely dissolving the placebo group violates the scientific purpose to test whether a vaccine has any efficacy or safety. According to NPR, the doctors lost the control group. They didn't lose it. They destroyed it. The Johnson County Clinical Trial in Lexana, Kansas, they did it on purpose, says NPR. Dr. Carlos Fierro, who runs the study there, says every participant was called back after the FDA authorized the vaccine. During that visit, we discussed emergency use authorization. We discussed the options, which include staying in the study without the vaccine. Amazingly, there were a couple of people, who chose to do that. But anyway, they destroyed that, so you can't tell the difference. Speaking of money.
Show me the money! Jerry,
yeah. Well, let's show you some money from Walensky. Her husband got $5 million in HHS grants, and that's just the beginning. She is married to a guy who is a medical doctor. Lauren Walensky, a pediatric oncology researcher. And in October 2019, her husband, Walensky's husband, Lauren, became the co-founder and member of the board of directors of a company called Lytica Therapeutics. Just 4 months later, they got a $16.9 million HHS grant to develop antibacterial peptides. Only $5.3 million of the money was initially dispersed to Lytica, and the remaining $11.6 million is scheduled to be dispersed upon achievement of certain developmental milestones. Now, the author of this article says, I've previously worked in the world of grant writing, and I can tell you that most agencies will not give grants to organizations that have existed for less than a year. This organization exists for 4 months, and they get a $17 million grant. They give them $5 million and say, show us these milestones. And here we are 2 years later, and they haven't collected a penny because they haven't passed any of the milestones. But hey, you know, if you can get a $5 million down payment and walk, that's the deal, isn't it? And so when you look at this, you say, well, yeah, October 2019, that was Trump was still in office, and she was not head of the CDC. But she was also, at that point in time, she was very politically connected within HHS and within, most importantly, the NIH. She was a friend of Fauci. As a matter of fact, many people were scratching their heads, many insiders, very surprised about her appointment until it came up how close she was to Fauci. Rochelle Walensky served as the chair of the Office of AIDS Research, which put her in close contact with Fauci. And as a member of the Health and Human Services panel, she would also have had a say as to whether or not her doctor husband and his company that he co-founded would get a grant after only being in existence for 4 months and having nothing to show for it. So then you have on the Drudge Report this weekend, a Daily Beast article that is one of the most disgusting pieces of yellow journalism, propaganda, and lies that I've ever seen. And that's even by Daily Beast standards. And they're pretty bad. They're really bad. I've had a lot of encounters with Daily Beast, personal encounters. They tried to get me thrown off because I published a joke that was basically just talking about is a Babylon Bee satire. And I talked about it, elaborated on it, and it was when I tweeted it out, they tried to get me thrown off for a satire piece. And, of course, I had encounters with them, with Danny Williams, illegitimate son of Bill Clinton, those encounters. I mean, the bullying that Daily Beast reporter was doing was just unbelievable. And I called around on it in the press conference. Anyway, I've had a lot of dealings with the Daily Beast. They hate me. I despise them. And so this is their headline. Pharmacists fight off COVID truthers. If I'm a COVID truther, what does that make Daily Beast? COVID liars. COVID truthers demanding horse medicine instead of the jab. And what they're talking about is ivermectin. Now, why is this happening? Well, it's because they have prohibited something that has been used for 60, 70 years, whose profile is very well known. And they've threatened doctors and pharmacists if they prescribe it. And so people are finding this because it's something that is widely used on humans as well as animals. It's used not just, they fail to mention anywhere in this piece of yellow journalism propaganda, they fail to mention how widely it is used in the rest of the world for things like malaria and other conditions in the third world. It's an antiviral. And instead, they focus on the fact that people are having to go buy the veterinary form of this because they've shut down the pharmaceutical grade form of it. And then they're talking, they find some guy, supposedly an anonymous person, who works in Texas with poison control. And he says, yeah, we've definitely seen an increase in calls to poison centers. But then he also says, there's no epidemic of ivermectin overdoses in hospitals. So what's the whole point of this? It's just a hit piece. It's a hit piece on people who demand that we have informed consent and that we listen to doctors, that we look at studies, that we're COVID truthers because we want to get to the truth instead of just lying to give profits to big pharmaceutical companies. But I've said it many times. I've said it when I talk about the genetic jabs. I said, what is the difference between medicine and a poison? Well, it's the dosage, right? The dosage. I've said it when I talked about fluoride in the water. I said, why, if you think that fluoride is effective, then why would you dump it in the water? Because you can't control the dosage. And even if it were uniformly distributed in the water, which I don't know how we guarantee that if you dump it in the water, but let's just assume, for the sake of argument, that you dump the fluoride in the water and it's uniformly distributed, what dosage should you have? Should you have the same dosage for a 250-pound male that you do for a 50-pound 6-year-old or something? How do you adjust that dosage? Well, you don't. And you don't care. And it's not going to be uniformly distributed in the water. And so I've said that in conjunction with these genetic injections. You know, this is not giving somebody something that is dead or weakened. This is giving them an mRNA code that's going to turn your body into a manufacturing facility, as Moderna pointed out. We can beat everybody else, President Trump, because we're going to have the people manufacture the vaccine inside their own body. And yet, the thing that we're manufacturing is a toxic poison. It is that harmful protein spike that we're manufacturing. So you're going to get the same dosage if you are a football player that weighs nearly 300 pounds, that guy who Super Bowl ring, all-star player, and he and his wife both got the shot. She got multiple sclerosis. It didn't happen. Nothing happened to him. She got the same doses that her husband did. And, of course, these kids, this two-year-old toddler that just died, gets the same dosage as a 300-pound football player, the lineman. Do you see a problem with that? Is this medicine? Is this science? So, doctors may lose their license if they spread so-called misinformation, says a medical panel. This is from Information Liberation, Chris Minahan. The Federation of State Medical Boards, under President CEO Chaudhry, sent out a statement last week saying, due to their specialized knowledge and training, licensed physicians possess a high degree of public trust and have, therefore, a powerful platform in society. They must share information that is factual, scientifically grounded, and consensus-driven for the betterment of public health. Well, let me just say it again. Science is never from authority. That is scholasticism. It is not empiricism. That's what Francis Bacon said when he set up the scientific method. We're not going to do scholasticism. We're not going to argue from authority, and we're not going to argue from a consensus. Every time we've had scientific advancement, it's been because one courageous individual has taken on the conventional wisdom of the consensus. He has challenged the establishment. And if you have an open environment where people see data, where you present the data, you present your thesis, and it's challenged, then that's what happens when you have an advancement of science. Science does not censor debate. Medicine does not censor debate. Instead, what we have is worship of consensus. We have worship of authority. We have scientism, which is a religion. As Chris Minahan points out, remember, when the consensus was to put everyone under medically induced coma and ventilators, and it killed some 85% of the patients who received the quote-unquote treatment, well, they've changed that now. He said that could still be the standard today if Chaudhry's consensus-based rules were widely enforced. Is pulling a doctor's license for disagreeing with you really going to increase public trust in the medical profession? No, it's destroyed any trust that I had in them. According to the head of the CDC, the vaccines no longer prevent transmission of COVID. And this is what I said. This is the key thing today, folks. Listen to this. Walensky, in an interview with CNN's Situation Room, said our vaccines are working exceptionally well. They continue to work well for Delta with regard to severe illness and death. They prevent that. But what they can't do anymore is prevent transmission. Therefore, we're back to the argument. If your motorcycle helmet protects you, my motorcycle helmet is not going to protect you. Yours will. So if your helmet works, you're good. If your seatbelt works, you're good. But you have no business telling me I've got to wear a motorcycle helmet, even if I don't ride a motorcycle. You got no business telling me I got to wear a seatbelt. That's something, if you want to do it, do it. If it works, great for you. But that's not the argument that they've been using. The argument that Paul Offit has been saying is, well, our vaccines, our helmets, our seatbelts don't work. So therefore, you have to wear a seatbelt and you have to wear a helmet. You have to get the vaccine because the vaccine, even though you know it doesn't work, it prevents transmission. So that's why you have to get it. Now, Walensky's saying exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. She says, it doesn't permit transmission, but it works. Well, if it works, you're done. You take it. I'm not taking it. Doctors in Israel, the most vaccinated country, says 95% of the severe patients were vaccinated. 85 to 90% of the hospitalizations were in fully vaccinated people. The effectiveness of the vaccine is waning and fading out. Maybe it never worked in the first place. And so after Walensky comes out and says that, a doctor, Dr. Benjamin Braddock, says, well, I said the same thing back in June, and I got suspended from Twitter for 12 hours for saying that. And now Walensky can say it, and it's no big deal. And you have the people commenting under CNN's tweet. It's a four-minute clip of her saying that. And they're saying, oh, she made a big mistake here. Yeah, she did. She told people the truth. And she basically laid down what we need to stop these mandates if any logic were to be applied. But, of course, this isn't about logic. It's not about science or medicine. This is about the raw exercise of political power for a different agenda. Some of the people responded to it and said, well, if it doesn't stop the transmission, that means that everybody's got to wear masks everywhere all the time. And I think that's where Walensky's going. Continuing to push universal vaccination is reasonably likely to drive development of a supervirus vaccine, says Robert Malone, the guy who developed the mRNA. And, of course, many of them have talked about. It's a well-known phenomenon called ADE. With vaccines that aren't really that effective, they create variants and they actually make situations worse. But a Swedish professor says, well, probably going to have at least 5 shots maybe of the vaccine. Yeah, just if it – this is called insanity. Just keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. The Public Health England shows the fatality rate in the vaccinated under 50s is 57% and greater than the unvaccinated. I'm not going to go into the statistics of that. And then there was, on August the 4th, there was a stop the shot. Now, this is something I could get behind. That was what I was saying all throughout 2020. All the people who were cheering Trump on, the lies that we heard, well, you know, if we didn't have Trump there, we'd be getting the Gates vaccine. And the Gates vaccine is a lot worse than this Trump vaccine. Yeah, right. Yeah, you know who said that? My former boss, right? And then pushing this stop the steal. I said, no, we needed to stop the lockdown. We needed to stop the vaccine. And since he was behind both of those, and since he has laid the groundwork for the most corrupt election we've ever had by leaving it as a lockdown election and a mail-in election, I'm not interested in trying to stop what is happening here. And oh, by the way, if you want to stop the steal, it was a steal on the behalf of InfoWars and on the behalf of Trump to grift you from money, to tell you, send us the money. Come to our events. Watch our shows so that we can get this back. No, what we should have had is stop the shot. And that's what they did on August the 4th. They had a conference, and it was done by the Truth for Health Foundation. I like it. Stop the shot. Dr. Peter McCullough was there, Dr. Michael Yaden, and others that you're very familiar with. I understand, look, when we're talking about protests, it isn't going to stop these people. But what it does is it shows us that we're not alone. If we show up in massive numbers, as you see happening in Europe and France and other places, it shows that the public is not happy with us. The only way that we see that here in America is when I go to YouTube to look at what kind of propaganda is being pushed by YouTube, by Google, by the major networks, because they'll go out and they'll grab stuff from ABC, CBS, NBC, NPR, things like that, and they'll feature it. Or they will feature stuff that's done by the so-called influencers. These are the people who are promoted by Google all the time to influence you, typically young people, to influence their generation. And so these influencers who are basically put into that position by Google, and it's, you know, reverse of what they do with me, for example, these influencers are getting promoted by Google, by YouTube. And they're also getting interviews with Fauci and Collins and things like that. And so they're promoting this stuff all the time. And if you go into those videos, what's interesting about it, and sometimes people will point it out in the comments, you look at these videos, some of them, they'll have a couple hundred thousand views. And they'll have tens of thousands of thumbs down and maybe about 10 thumbs up. And you look at the comments, and all the comments are negative. And so that's a good thing to understand that you're not the only person who thinks this way. And we don't see that out on the streets. And that would be the advantage of these demonstrations. Do them peacefully. Do them out in the middle of Woodstock or something so that the government can't claim that you're trying to encroach on their sacred space or whatever. But, you know, have a big meeting just to tell them that you're not going to put up with this, that you don't agree with this, and to show them that you're not alone. And to show ourselves. So we've got Dr. Michael Yaden warning women of childbearing age, do not accept these vaccines. He said, you're being lied to. I'm being lied to. Again, this is a former vice president of Pfizer. He specialized in respiratory illnesses and so forth. He said, the authorities are not giving us full information about the risks of these products. He said, women were exposed to a new product for morning sickness about 60 years ago called thalidomide. It led to at least 10,000 birth malformations. But, you know, we never learned anything from that, or we've forgotten that lesson. Babies are not safe and protected inside the uterus, he said, which is what we're used to thinking. He said, in fact, it's a miracle of minute development. There are critical stages, especially in the early stages, where if interfered with biochemicals or with something else, it can change the course of development for that child irreparably. And let me just insert in his comments here. One of the big no-nos, even for the people who were cheerleaders for genetic modification for CRISPR-Cas9 and all these other things, telling everybody, oh, it's great, it's a cheap scalpel, and we can do these very precise gene edits, and we know precisely what we're doing, and we can do it like a scalpel. Well, no, actually, it's more like a chainsaw. If they even know what they're modifying, it's like taking a chainsaw to it. But they point out that you don't want to do these edits to children at a very young age because then they become seed edits, meaning that if the child is very, very young, a baby, an unborn baby, it can permeate throughout the child's DNA, and these changes that you make will be passed on to their offspring. So it'll be a permanent change for them for their life, but also they will pass it on. They call it a seed change, a seed change. And now we want to take this genetic code injection and give it to pregnant women. We don't even know what it's doing. He says you never, ever give inadequately tested medicines, medicinal products to a pregnant woman. And that is exactly what is happening. Our government is urging pregnant women and the women of childbearing age to get vaccinated, and they're telling them that they're safe. And that's a lie because those studies have simply not been done. With a closer look, he said, the situation looks much worse due to actual damaging effects on fertility. Because you know that this protein spike, which is so damaging, that your body is now being trained to manufacture. So instead of training your body really effectively to deal with a pathogen that is dead or inactive, what they're doing is they're training your body to create a deadly pathogen. And that deadly pathogen is accumulating in the ovaries, among other places. And we've had nearly 1,200 unborn babies die, miscarriages, pregnant women who got vaccinated, in the VAERS report, 1,175. Meanwhile, Fauci says booster shots for the elderly are now on the horizon within the next few weeks. His support for boosters contradicts a previous claim that fully vaccinated Americans wouldn't need them. He made that claim July 11th. It hasn't even been a month that he said we wouldn't need boosters. Now he's saying we do need boosters. They don't have the time, they haven't done any studies to have that change. He's just making this stuff up as he goes along. You understand that, right? This is not new facts because of new research. They didn't have time to do any new research. No research has hit to show that this stuff is safe. These are just pronouncements, lies, propaganda. Fauci told CNN's Fareed Zakaria, we'll almost be certainly be boosting those people, the elderly, before we boost the general population. How about that? Yeah, this mafia figure, he's now got another euphemism for killing people. Yeah, go boost Luca Brasi. Luca Brasi got boosted with the fishes. We'll be right back.
Common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers.
thedavidknightshow.com. Only a few are aware in the last years of the 20th century that this world is being watched keenly and closely by men who feverishly developed technology they hoped would give them godlike power over others. Even as some warn that we are being scrutinized in microscopic detail like creatures in a drop of water, most of us were distracted or complacent. So the massive efforts continued to create artificial intellects, vast, cool, and unsympathetic. Others worked to create mechanical bodies that would surpass those of mere flesh and blood. Others began building machines at the atomic level. Still others began to alter the very building blocks of life on Earth, mixing plants with animals, mixing animals with humans, creating chimeras like those of ancient myths. Like a two-sided sword of Damocles, each of these technologies held wondrous possibilities to improve life, but also held the threat of destroying life on an unprecedented scale. Will those who covet power and eternal life on this earth wield this two-edged sword benevolently, or will it be used maliciously, selfishly, or carelessly? While much of the technology remains hidden, the nature of mankind is not hidden. And for millennia, timeless eyes of spiritual people have watched this world, and slowly and surely, they have drawn their plans against us. Yes, and of course, that's from a couple of years ago. I was paraphrasing The War of the Worlds. Now, of course, the beginning of H.G. Wells' novel, the idea is that there's alien eyes that are watching us from Mars, and yet it really is those among us that are alien to everything that we believe, who have set out to watch and to control everything that we do. Here's a good example of this. I mentioned this on Friday. What is being done now with Apple. And as they are putting in their pedo hunter that is going to scan through your phone looking for any pedophile pictures, I think we should understand exactly what this is. You got privacy advocates who are pointing out the obvious, as this article from Zero Hedge quotes, the WhatsApp head, Will Cathart, says, child sexual abuse material and the abusers who traffic in it are repugnant, and everybody wants to see those abusers caught. But instead of focusing on making it easier for people to report content that's shared with them, Apple has built software that can scan all the private photos on your phone, even photos that you haven't shared with anyone. And that's not privacy. We've had personal computers for decades, and there's never been a mandate to scan the private content of all desktops, laptops, or phones globally for unlawful content. It's not how technology was built in free countries and how it works in free countries. This is an Apple-built and operated surveillance system that could very easily be used to scan private content for anything that a government decides it wants to control. Will the system be used in China? What content will they consider to be illegal there? And how will we ever know? In other words, are they going to search to see if you've got something that would indicate you're a Christian? Maybe you've got some memes or pictures of crosses or something, or Bible verses or something like that, or a Bible app. Now you're marked. Now you're outed, even if you were in an underground church. I mean, you understand what this is about. This is about constantly watching and surveilling everything about us, to know everything about us. And they've been bragging about how they were going to do this, these technocratic elites, for the longest time. I mean, just take a look at Mika Brzezinski's father, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was really the person in charge during the Carter administration. He wrote a book, Between Two Ages, saying that in the mid-20th century, they were between two ages, that the age to come, the technocratic age, you were going to have the technocratic corporate elite who were going to know everything that we were doing, and know it, most likely, before we did it, to predict it. But they would control everything. And for that prediction, and for his ideas about how they could, the steps that they could take to create a world government by creating three regional supra-states, supra-national organizations like the EU and like North American Union and so forth, and then unify all of them. For that, they put him in charge of the Trilateral Commission. They put him in charge of the Carter administration, just as Kissinger had been in charge of the Nixon administration. So this is something that's been a long time coming, isn't it? And as I pointed out many times during the Snowden leaks, we saw this document here. This was actually reported by Der Spiegel in Germany. The U.S. press didn't really talk about this a great deal. This is a series of three slides that shows, who would have thought in 1984, referring to the Super Bowl commercial, that this would become Big Brother. And you see the picture there of Steve Jobs holding the phone. And then the idiots, the zombies, would line up to pay for it. Yeah, that's the way they view. This is a file that was being pushed around by the NSA, part of the Five Eyes group. These are people laughing at you, calling you zombies, saying not only are you know, here you got Apple, these people were champions of the individual and of privacy and of personal computers, and yet they pushed out Big Brother and the zombies lined up to buy it. That's what the NSA thinks of you. They openly mock you and laugh at you. And then when you look at some of the other slides, as I've shown in the past, I don't really blame Steve Jobs. I don't think he was necessarily in it. Maybe he was. I don't know. But I suspect when you look at something like this slide here, Prism, you can see that back in 2007, the Prism program, which is a geospatial intelligence program to do data mining on people, the first ones in it, of course, were Microsoft. And then you had these other organizations that get in there. But the very last one to get in was Apple. And that happened after Steve Jobs was gone. And it happened after they put Tim Cook in there. There's no secret that Steve Jobs, when he went to talk to people in Washington, he did not get along with them. Now, that's not to say that he, and certainly his wife, as I pointed out, she's 100% on board, sixth richest woman in person, not even breaking it down by sex, sixth richest person in the world. And her publication, The Atlantic, is a Five Eyes NATO propaganda rag. And she's pushing the idea that if you're not vaccinated, you should never fly again. This is a woman who owns two private jets. So maybe he was in on it. I don't know. Or maybe she's just in on it. But I do believe that Tim Cook is as evil as Bill Gates when you look at what he's trying to do. Apple has announced, as I pointed out on Friday, they'll begin analyzing images on the devices even before they're uploaded to the cloud. You put anything on the cloud, of course, they're going to scan through it, right? But this is even on your devices. Apple defended the decision, claiming that there is a 1 in 1 trillion chance of false positives. But privacy advocates don't believe that, and neither do I. And also, if you've got an app to do that, as I just pointed out, you know, why are you setting this up? You've now got a platform, and all you have to do is you've established the principle, and all you have to do is just wait for the government to tell you what it wants you to search on the phones of its prisoners in your particular country, and they'll be more than happy to do that. All it would take, says the Electronic Freedom Foundation, all it would take to widen the narrow back door, that's what it is, that Apple is building is an expansion of the machine learning parameters to look for additional types of content. This is not a slippery slope. It's a faulty built system, that is waiting for external pressure to make the slightest change. Now, I showed you those slides from Apple because the NSA was laughing about it. The NSA already has access to your phone. This is nothing new, right? It's a Big Brother device. They're using it to spy on you and your zombies for going out and buying these things, they said. So they've had this. These were slides that were released back in 2013 with the Snowden leaks. So, you know, 8 years ago. They were laughing about how they could break into Apple phones, not just the Google phones. But now they're openly talking about it. They don't even try to hide this anymore. You know, we had had James Clapper, who lied, committed perjury under oath, trying to deny it at the time in 2013, 2 months before these slides came out. He denied that this was being done. Now you've got Apple openly saying, hey, we're doing it. So, and you're so addicted to your phone, you won't do anything about it. You won't care. Eric Weinstein called out Apple's Tim Cook for scanning our quote-unquote private photos for child porn while utterly ignoring Jeffrey Epstein's high-level child sex trafficking and ties to intelligence. But see, here's the other part of this. If we want to talk about pedophiles, why are these same organizations, you know, like Tim Cook, for example, he's a big mover and shaker in the LGBT movement. Why are we sexualizing and grooming our kids with these drag queen story time hours and with all this other stuff that is happening to them in kindergarten and on? To me, when you talk about shutting down pedophiles, it rings hollow. And I said that about Trump. He doesn't have a problem with any of the those things that were happening. He didn't ever speak out against that. As a matter of fact, he was virtue signaling about appointing LGBT people to his cabinet. Now, Biden has done it to a higher degree, but they're on the same trajectory. And Biden is building on Trump's precedents. And Trump is building on Obama's precedents, right? So, you know, you go from Obama to Trump to Biden, and it doesn't matter. They're on the same trajectory, the same path. And so now you have a lot of, you know, you've got a man absurdly dressed up in a dress and a wig that is like the deputy of HHS and other individuals like that under the Biden administration. So it's more visual. But Trump was bragging about, even before the election, you had Melania saying, yeah, he's the first president to openly support homosexual marriage before he became president. And look, he's appointed the DNI as open homosexual. But you know, it's just a continuation of all of this stuff. And you look at what's happening with the transgenders coming after the kids. Trump never pushed back against any of that. When all of this stuff was coming about, I covered, and it was, again, it's one of these videos. Occasionally you'll find a video that's got fewer than 100 views, but very significant in what was happening. And there was a video like that of Michael Hayden. He's been the head of the CIA. He's been the head of the NSA. I mean, I don't know of anybody else who's been ahead of both of those organizations. And he was speaking at the Washington and Lee University's law school. And I'm going to show you this clip. And you'll see in this clip as he's talking, there's like a big eyeball thing in the background of some poster that, you know, they were selling people. But it was absolutely amazing what he had to say. He said, I don't blame James Clapper for lying under oath. He says, I blame Ron Wyden, the senator who asked him that question. He knew that we were spying on everybody. And all the other senators and all their staff knew that as well. And nobody else put him on the hot seat for that. Well, why not? See, why not? You ask an uncomfortable question like that, that everybody knows is going on, and they all cover it up, and then they blame you. But, of course, Congress never blamed Clapper for lying under oath. He never got a perjury charge. But here's what else Michael Hayden said at that Washington and Lee Law School speech that he gave.
This is not about guilt. In fact, let me be really clear, okay? NSA doesn't just listen to bad people. NSA listens to interesting people.
So, there you go. They listen to interesting people.
And now Apple is openly, and they did it. They were doing it at the time, and they were doing it with people's phones. But now Apple's just kind of changed the terms of service agreement, openly telling you that they're going to scan your phone. And is it going to be accurate? I'll never forget one of the first times I saw one of these AI looking to predict crime and to blow the whistle, and I think I mentioned it on Friday. They saw a guy who was circling a car in a parking lot a couple of times, and then he bends down and disappears on the other side of the car from the camera. And AI called the police that a car theft is underway. He was changing his own tire, flat tire. Now we have a new identity authentication requirement for unemployment that is now being spreading across the country at the state level. We've got 27 states have hired a company called ID.me, 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 for unemployment verification. It includes Texas, Pennsylvania, Arizona, California, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Massachusetts, Missouri, Mississippi, Montana, North Carolina, North Dakota, New Jersey, New York, Nevada, Oregon, South Carolina, Virginia, Washington, and Wyoming. So if you are, you know, the remaining 23 states there, good for you, but they're still trying to push this through. What this is this company said, now we're under contract with an additional two states, so it's going to go up to 29 of them. Our federal partners include the VA and the Social Security Administration. And so what they're doing is they're going to require that you submit to this identification thing to prove your identity before receiving payments. And, of course, what this is going to involve is biometrics and voice imprints. So they're creating a database in order to for you to get unemployment benefits. This looks very much like what is already going on and been pushed by the Gates administration, by the Gates organizations in India. They partnered with India. They put in a system called Aadhaar. And you've got a lot of poor people in India who are on welfare. And as a condition of them getting welfare, they have to take the Aadhaar number. It's a number. They have to accept that in order to get the welfare benefits. You see, we keep coming back to that. We're told that we're going to have a vaccine passport. We'll not be allowed to buy, sell, or travel. And then, of course, already under the auspices of Bill Gates in India, if you're poor and you have no job and, you know, they've locked you down because that's what they intend to do to all of us. That's what they began doing under Trump. You're not essential. Your business is not essential. We're going to shut down your small business. All your employees are going to be unemployed. But don't worry. We'll give you a stimulus check. And then we'll give you another stimulus check. And then we'll start making them monthly. And then we'll call it universal basic income. Oh, by the way, though, if you want that universal basic income check, you're going to have to give us your biometric information, your voice prints. You have to accept a number. And so you have to have that Aadhaar ID to get any of these services. And that's now what they're rolling out here in America. The agreement says that ID.me can share the biometric data with its clients, such as the Department of Labor, to process unemployment claims, plus any other third-party service providers and other third parties where permitted by law to enforce the terms to comply with legal obligations or applicable to respond to legal processes, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, they can do whatever they want to with your data. It's owned by them. And this has been the tactic by which the CIA and the NSA has spied on people from their inception. We had, you know, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act was put together because of the investigations of the Church Committee hearings. That was not about Cuban assassinations or heart attack guns. That was about the CIA and the NSA spying on Americans. And the way they were doing it was going to AT&T, the Bell companies, the phone company monopoly, and saying, give us information on people without a search warrant. They would just go to the companies and they say, turn over the information. And the legal fiction that they operated under was to say, well, this is an information that belongs to these people. It belongs to AT&T because these people are doing business with AT&T and AT&T is collecting the information. Therefore, it's AT&T's information and they can just voluntarily hand it over to us. And if they voluntarily give it to us, we don't need to get a search warrant to spy on people. They'll spy on us, on them for us. That's the
reason that they eventually pushed, you know, they tried CISPA twice, SOPA, ACTA, PIPA, then they got CISA to protect these companies from any legal lawsuits because they spy on you for the government. And so they're going to collect this biometric data. They'll turn it over to the government or they'll turn it over to third parties. They'll sell it for you. They claim that it belongs to them. And they're going to grab every bit of biometric data they can from you and create a dossier on every person. The files will also contain, besides biometric information, it'll also contain the individual's full name, email address, phone number, social security number, date of birth, street address, city, state, postal code, gender, and a unique identifier, the number. The number. And you'll need to have that number in order to not just buy, sell, or because they may still, even with a number, they may still not let you have a job. So if you want to get alms from them, be hand-fed by them, you'll take that number. You better start preparing. You better start preparing right now. Better focus on that. That's my message to you. Prepare for yourself and for your family. Time is getting very short. ID.me tracks the IP address, the town, the time, whenever users interact with the company as well. As Mark Jeftovic says, big tech are supposed to be the plumbers, not the patricians of an internet discourse. And this reminds me of Gary Johnson when he was running for president for the Libertarian Party. Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico. And besides being absolutely clueless about Aleppo, in the middle of the, you know, the Syrian ISIS stuff and this massive bombing campaign going on in Aleppo, everybody is talking about it. And he was sitting there. They were giving him undue respect because he had been a governor. Didn't know anything about it. Not only, it wasn't even that he didn't know anything about current events, but he doesn't know anything about liberty to run as a libertarian. And I'll give you that example here. But, you know, they asked him about Aleppo. And what do you think about Aleppo? And he goes, Aleppo? Aleppo? Anyway, he doesn't know anything about basic liberty either, because when you had, he was also asked about the case in Colorado, the Masterpiece Bakery guy who was singled out to have his nose rubbed into the cake, essentially, by these gay guys who wanted him to make a gay wedding cake. And they wanted to rub his nose in the cake. And so they said, you will make us a custom cake. And he says, I'll sell you anything in the bakery. I'm not going to discriminate against people, but I'm not going to custom make something for you that violates my beliefs. In the same way that you're not going to go into a Jewish deli and say, you know, I want you to make a Holocaust was a hoax thing or whatever. Hitler was is my homeboy cake or something, right? You know, they were deliberately trying to rub his nose in it. They reported him then to the Colorado board. He lost everything, I think, all the way up to the Supreme Court and then won at the Supreme Court. Now they're after him again. One of the lawyers who was a tranny came after him after that and said, I want you to make me a traniversary cake. And he refused to do that. So now the same process has started over again. I mean, how many times are they going to do this to him? But as that was working its way through with Gary Johnson, he weighed in on it, and his take on it was, well, of course he has to make the cake. He doesn't have any choice in this. He said, just think, if the utility company decided that they didn't want to give you electricity because you're a Christian, that'd be wrong. It's like, are you that clueless? Do you not realize that this guy is not a utility company? A utility company is somebody that's been given a government monopoly. He doesn't have a monopoly. He's not. And at the same time, Gary Johnson would defend the people who did have a de facto monopoly, people like Google and Facebook and Twitter, to punish people, even when their business model is the digital public square. He defended that. And yet he comes after this small individual baker, says, no, you got to do it because your business is like a utility. It's not at all like a utility. But as this person points out, Mark Jeftovic, he said, big tech supposed to be the plumbers, not the patricians of internet discourse. In other words, they're supposed to just be the people providing the infrastructure, providing the digital public square. They provide the pipes that we all communicate with each other. They should not be looking at content. Another analogy is, you know, what if you had the phone company and they're constantly monitoring every one of your conversations and they don't like your politics or they don't like your religion, or they don't like what you think about the vaccine or the lockdown. And so they then just come and they pull your phone service. That's what we're talking about, and that's really coming pretty close to happening. And that's what's happening with big tech. Here's an example. MailChimp, and this is one of the reasons we haven't done a mailing list thing, because, you know, everybody, we started preparing some of the stuff, and everybody was saying, well, MailChimp is about the only one that you don't get put automatically into the spam folder by most mail programs. But then we look at MailChimp. They're going to shut down my service in a heartbeat as soon as they find out. Well, it's the same thing that you see from PayPal, same thing you see from Spotify and these other people. MailChimp would do that. Because MailChimp is already going through to look to see what people are putting in their correspondence and evaluating it, not for being spammy, but evaluating it for its political correctness and whether or not they agree with it, and they will shut you down. They'll look at the content of your communications. So then we tried to correspond with people. When I put out that Live Not by Lies by Solzhenitsyn, the audio version of his essay, it was about a 10-minute video, trying to get it to people who had supported us back in the early spring. And so we didn't have a mail program, still don't. So we tried to send it out on Proton Mail and sent out a few emails with a large number of people in the list, and they locked up our email service for a period of time. Said, you're spamming people. It's like, okay. So here we are. You know, if you can hear me, great. I don't know how much longer it's going to last. Patreon, same way, of course. They have a trust and safety team. And listen to this. They have what they call the Manifest Observable Behavior Group. This is what they use. Manifest Observable Behavior. Now, what is the acronym for that? M-O-B. Oh, MOB. They're the speech control MOB. Manifest Observable Behavior. The MOB. Shutting down your speech. It says it's entirely based on observable facts and what a camera has seen or what an audio device has recorded about you, and that's the basis of which we take away your ability to transact financial transactions. So we get very rigorous and specific because we're talking about removing a person's income. So, you know, we got to have a good reason for it. So we call out our MOB, our Manifest Observable Behavior Group. The Associated Press fact-checked a U.S. Senate testimony on the efficacy of ivermectin, claiming there is, quote, no evidence that ivermectin is a miracle drug against COVID, and they labeled it false, and they committed a logical fallacy called, and this is a logical fallacy, it's called an appeal to ignorance. The absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. By the way, I didn't give you the term on Friday, but I had a lot of people get very upset with me over the fact that I said, I'm not going to make the argument that there's no virus. I'm not convinced of that. And it is a logical fallacy to say that because you haven't been given documents by a government agency or because the government agency says, well, I don't have that information that you requested, to say, therefore, that in the absence of evidence, there is evidence of absence. Right? You can't say, you can't make that connection. And I said, first of all, you can't prove it. But let me explain to you. That was the argument that we could have had a year ago, that there was no virus. I was saying a year ago, the pandemic is political. The pandemic is the lockdown. You know, that is what's happening. That's what we need to fight. Whatever this virus is or is not, I said it a year ago, over a year ago, over 512 days ago. I said, whatever this is, if we do what China has done, which is not anything that anybody has ever done before, but they got everybody, they had a massive bot campaign against Italy to get them to do a lockdown. And then everybody says, look, China did it, Italy did it. Everybody does it then. But I said, that's what we need to fight. Because whatever this virus is or is not, that is, even if it was the worst case scenario, we're going to be unable to handle it as well if we lock everything down. But let me tell you, that was the argument for a year ago. Right now, the argument is the vaccine. Right now, the argument, and has been for the last year, are the numbers and how they lie to us about statistics. Don't get caught up into this. And I know what's happening. I know people are watching, what is that guy's name? Stu Peters, I think is his name. So he does a thing last week with somebody who is a health consultant. a health consultant, saying there's no virus. And so then Owen Schroyer does a report. People are sending me Owen Schroyer's report. Breaking news. We got somebody in Ireland saying that the virus doesn't exist. And what it was this reporter in Ireland, again, saying I asked them for the stuff and they said they don't have what I want. So therefore the virus doesn't exist. And this reporter, it's not breaking news. This reporter was all dressed up in a coat standing in front of a Christmas tree lit up. This is at least 8 months old. And so what is new about this is that this is now what Stu Peters and Owen Schroyer can use to get an audience. But I'm concerned about this rollout. I'm concerned about the vaccine passport. I'm concerned about the toxins in these vaccines. And you better be concerned about that. You better be concerned about this high-tech slavery that they're locking us under. And stop all this stuff about the Wuhan lab and whether or not the virus exists or whether or not it was great. Gain of function is something we ought to be concerned about. I've been fighting this since 2014, gain of function. And it wasn't me that was doing the original research. It was Allison Young at USA Today. And they actually stopped it for a short period of time with Congress. They put a moratorium on it. But then, of course, in the Trump administration, they brought it back. No problem. No problem for Trump. He made friends with all those people. He's not playing 4D chess. He's playing you. You're the pawn. And we got to stop making these arguments because they're sensational. That's a sensational thing. The magnets are a sensational thing. But let's focus on stuff that is hardcore. Let's dissect what they're telling us, the lies that they're telling us, and show people what is going on. We've got to stop this lockdown, and we've got to save people from getting vaccinated. I'm not interested in playing games. I'm not interested in doing stuff just because it's going to get an audience. Yeah, an appeal to ignorance is what that's called. The absence of evidence is not evidence of abstinence. Absence. The other thing that seemed to get a lot of anger from people was the fact that I said that, no, in my opinion, I don't think we have a flat earth. But let me say this. Whether or not you think it's a flat earth, I said that to the person who sent me the question. I said, don't let this divide you and your wife. And don't let this become the focus. Do you realize that we're going to be flat on the ground with a boot stomping us in the face forever with this high-tech slavery that the world has never seen? If we don't stop this now, we don't have much time to do something about this. You want to argue about the shape of the earth? Are you kidding me? I had some guy on the comment on the show say, well, what is your biblical cosmology? I said, Genesis 6. You want me to explain any more to you on Twitter in 128 characters? I said, why don't you get focused on what the real problems are right now? This is not a real problem. This is a distraction. The stuff about whether the virus exists or not is a distraction. It's the vaccine. The vaccine is dangerous. The lockdowns are dangerous. The tyranny is dangerous. The control and the tracking is dangerous. We got to stop that. Forget looking in the past. Forget all of this, hugging of Trump and everything. It's ridiculous what's happening. Even this infrastructure bill I talked about on Friday, the alcohol monitors for new cars. Why is that happening now? Why is that happening? Well, let me tell you, there's a couple of things going on. First, from the corporation standpoint, for the longest time, and Eric Peters and I have talked about this on and on and on about all of the multiplication of safety devices being mandated on cars and about the air quality control and the complication on cars and the engines. The engines have gotten so difficult to produce that you can't even, the big, gigantic corporations have to now pool their resources to develop a new engine because there's so many different complicated things involved with it for pollution control and fuel economy and everything else as they keep making it bigger and bigger and heavier and more expensive. But the car companies love that because it presents an obstacle to competition. If you go back and you look at the Elio a few years ago, right? Some guy decided that he had an idea. He could call it, if you make a three-wheel vehicle, then it's not as difficult to drive as a motorcycle, but it doesn't qualify as a car in a lot of different states, so you don't have to put all of the safety stuff on there that makes it so incredibly expensive and also makes it difficult for these guys who are entrepreneurs to put that stuff on there and to comply with all the safety regulations and all the crash stuff and all the regulations. If you call it a car, they can't. They've shut down the barrier of competition now for anybody that wants to start a new car company. Isn't going to happen. And one of the reasons that they held off on the electric car for a while was that they knew the electric car was going to be a very, very simple device. You basically have a chassis, you have a big battery, and you got a motor on one, two, or four wheels that you drive. Okay, so it's basically what they call a skate. And they can put any kind of body that they want to on it and put all kinds of bells and whistles on it. But that fundamental aspect of it, that commodity, if you will, it's going to become a commodity. It's very, very simple. It's not complicated like an engine with all the pollution control stuff on it. And so you're going to wind up having one or two companies make these platforms. And everybody else is going to buy it and put their body style on it and dress it up. And so it becomes a commodity device. How do they keep that from becoming something that anybody and everybody can do? Well, again, it comes back to more and more of these safety things that are on there. So that helps to protect their monopoly, and the corporations love that. You know, when the Trump administration, again, in his EPA group, they had a good guy, and trying to remember his name now, it escapes me for the moment. He was Scott something. He's from Ohio. He's the attorney general there. Anyway, he was fighting these regulations, but you had the car companies demanding more regulations for pollution control and more mileage requirements to be brought in according to the California standard. They wanted the regulations. Why? Because it kept competitors out of the marketplace. But with the electric car, you know, all of a sudden you got Tesla coming in and so forth. It opens up that to a lot of people. So now they've got to add even more absurd things on there that's going to be hard for other people to comply with and to get this tested and certified and so forth. So the corporations love the complexity. They love the regulations. They're begging for more of them to keep out competitors. Then the government. The government wants to make cars expensive so we can't afford them. It's just that simple. And to make them expensive so that at the very most, what you can do is afford to rent it by the ride in a city. They want to shut down your transportation completely in America. They can do that with the trains, the buses, and the planes, with a vaccine passport, with a mask, or whatever arbitrary thing they want to do. But they got a problem with the cars, so they want to make the cars very difficult for us to afford. They want to make the gasoline very expensive, or they want to ban gasoline cars altogether. And then they also want to have a kill switch. And when you look at this alcohol monitor, that gives them the kill switch. It's another thing to make it more expensive. It's another thing that helps the corporations to protect their monopolies. This is what's happening with all this. And, of course, they stick it in an infrastructure bill. So, yeah, this is where we're headed. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. We're going to talk about the Trump shots and about the masks. Stay with us.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Looking for better information? APSRadioNews.com features articles and commentary, along with audio from all the top news from around the world. APSRadioNews.com.
All right, and before we get back into politics, I just want to thank some of the people who have sent us things by mail. It's a little bit easier for me to do that. We try to get back to people. I try to thank people through Subscribestar, through Venmo. It's hard to do that. It's really hard to thank people with Cash App. The only thing I've seen that I can do is just tap a heart. No way. I mean, people can write messages to me, but I can't respond to them. So I really do appreciate the support that people have given us on those other ones. And please forgive me if you don't hear anything from us. But got a nice card here from Kelly about Scout. I'll just give everybody an update. The outside of his leg, which is almost completely exposed muscle, I can't believe how it has grown back with just keeping it clean with water, putting honey on it, sealing it up with Vetiricin. We had a listener send that to us, and so I really do appreciate everybody who has been praying for Scout and asking about that. God heals, we simply treat. And what we've seen with this is good evidence of that. He still does have a large hole, an open area on the inside of his leg, but one side of that is now attached and is now starting to grow in, although the other three sides, it's kind of a elongated loop, are still curled in and not attached. But if it's growing in on one side, it may continue to grow across. So, and he's feeling much better, much closer to his old self. So I do really do appreciate that. We had a lot of people who sent us contributions to help with the big medical bills, and thank you for that as well. This letter is from Chris. Forgive the old-fashioned method of communication. I supported you on Venmo, and instead of using other electronic means, I thought I'd just pull out the old checkbook. Thank you. It says, keep you and your family in prayers. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. This is a note from Kemper and Lenny. My wife and I are in our early 40s. We're fellow brother and sister in Christ that listen to your show together and discuss it often. What we value most about your show is that you share your faith in Jesus and encourage you to keep doing so. Well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you, and thank you for the contribution. And, you know, we are all called to do that, and I'm fortunate in the sense that I have a place where I can do that more easily. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that people can do it. Used to be that people, you know, you go back to that 1946 case, Marsh versus Alabama, this lady that was handing out religious tracts in the public square, and they shut her down. So she took that to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, even if the public square is privately owned, you can't shut down people's free speech. And, you know, there's a time for doing that. You can hand out tracts to people, but, you know, it's difficult if you don't know somebody, you don't really know, or they don't know you. And so just in the context of what we look at here and what we read, I think it's important because I don't see any hope. And I've said this many times in public. I said it at the Gen 6 conference about 3 years ago. I said, if you look at what these people have developed in terms of technology, and it is far worse than even what we know about. What we know about is bad enough. But if you look at this, it is an absolutely hopeless situation. But what encourages me is that God is in control and that God is glorified when we are in a hopeless situation to deliver us, right? So as Doug Wilson put it, he said in terms of talking about the kind of situations that we're in, he goes, here you are, and you're all dressed up for battle, and you got your wooden shield and your plastic sword, and then over the horizon comes a real giant and then a real dragon. And you say, why does God keep doing this to me? So that's basically where we are. We're standing against this with a wooden shield and a plastic sword, and this is something that is extremely virulent, powerful, and we're arrayed against the biggest powers on earth. But we should not be concerned about that. I talked about that when somebody said, you know, talk about some political figures that you like. And I'm always mentioning William Wilberforce because he stood against the most powerful economic interests of his day. And that was the slave industry. Because the slavery was integrated in with all of the global trade. I mean, you know, it was just one of one component of this circular trade route that they had, and they'd worked it out so that, you know, they pick up this product over here and they put this other product over there, and then they pick up the next one and they take it to the next destination. And human slaves were just one product to them. And so he took this on, and he spent his entire life doing it. One man against all those powerful moneyed interests. But it wasn't just one man, because he was doing it to glorify God. And he won. First, he shut down the trade, and then before he died, they shut down slavery in the British Empire. And so we should not be afraid to tackle the giants. And this is why I don't want to give people just the bad news. I want you to have the good news. And that is, the good news is that we don't have to, well, you know, we haven't even got a prayer. And it's like, oh, your prayer is the one thing you've always got. And it's the first and the most powerful, the mightiest weapon that you've got. If you're a Christian, you've got prayer. Because it's God that can grant these requests. So that's why I continue to talk about it. I talk about it because I give you my perspective on the news and how I analyze it, and that's my perspective. It's from a Christian perspective. But it's also the good news. I give you a lot of bad news. I was just telling Karen this morning, it's like, wow, this is bad stuff. When I was reading that stuff about what is happening to the babies, what Fauci and Planned Parenthood and the University of Pittsburgh are doing to babies, I said, this is really dark stuff. And I just have to give people the good news. I tell you what is happening with the NSA, the CIA, with Apple and your phones and all this well laid out plan. But we don't have to worry about military superiority and horses and chariots, because we just have to worry about being on God's side. That's what we have to worry about. And we leave the consequences to Him. Let's take a look at somebody who thinks he's God. Obama. The Obama variant was a hashtag that was trending over the weekend. And as I said earlier, it was really funny to watch. First, it was the Republicans who started hashtag Obama variant about his 60-year-old birthday party, or his birthday party for his 60th birthday. Birthday party is not 60 years old, but he is. And so they started Obama variant to mock him, because they had already put out a DeSantis variant to attack DeSantis because he was giving freedom in some areas. Again, still pushing the vaccine. I will not applaud him for doing that, but he's been good in terms of other issues, pushing back against the vaccine mandates, even by corporations, because that's been the plan from the very beginning, corporate coercion. So he's pushed back against that. So they call it the DeSantis variant. And so so the conservatives, in response, called it the Obama variant. And so then there's this war going back and forth between the Obama party that was going to be 700 people, and then he cut it down to 500. And then what's happening in Sturgis, where you have what was last year 400,000 people, and nobody died, really. Well, actually, you did have a couple of people die from the motorcycles. I'm not laughing about that, but I mean, it just shows how absurd the risks are, right? And that's something they said again this year. They said, well, these guys know that they're riding motorcycles, and they know what a risk that is, and or even a car, you know, but a motorcycle is riskier than a car, and no doubt about it. And so, you know, they had last year, they had, let's see, what is the total here? Rallygoers reasoned that after years of riding Harleys, the coronavirus is just another risk. That's right. If you're afraid of risk, you're going to stay home, and you'll live forever, right, behind that door? No. Five motorcycle riders were killed in crashes during the 2020 rally. It's more than that. Five people died from motorcycle crashes. Nobody died from the virus last year. And already this year, there's been one fatal crash, but nobody's dying from the virus. And by the way, take a look at Sturgis. Take a look at this picture here. They pose for this picture. Now, that's what freedom looks like. That's what the normal looks should look like. And we zoomed in and scanned around this picture, and this big crowd picture. I didn't see but one person who had anything that could even pass as a mask, and it was basically a bandana one guy's got on his face. And I said to Karen, I said, I don't know if he's trying to, I can't believe that he's worried about catching COVID and he's going to put that cloth bandana on his face. I think he's more worried about somebody seeing his picture. I think that's what that's really about. Yeah, he's probably got a job back in California. He's afraid if his picture shows up, he's going to get fired from his job. And that's the world that we live in right now. So then, you know, do we even shake hands or not? As the AP is telling everybody, oh, you should be worried about shaking hands. An age-old human gesture is now in limbo. And again, you're called to just shut this down. If you're somebody's giving you a hard time about shaking hands, just do it. Just do it. Ignore this stuff. Don't be intimidated by this. Live your life. Again, when we look at these pastors up in Canada, they're being arrested. James Coates, he said, I'm concerned about the businesses who are having their livelihoods and their businesses taken away. But he said, I'm not doing this fundamentally to change the laws or as civil disobedience or anything. He says, I'm doing this not out of civil disobedience. I'm doing this out of obedience to God. And I'm just going to let this fall wherever it may. And when you do that, when you live your life, that's a very dangerous thing to them. As a matter of fact, they did that from July until it was around December. They started arresting these guys, December and January. And it was just these people going about living their lives, worshiping God or whatever is normal. That was something that showed that their whole pandemic was a lie. And that was very, very dangerous to them. That was the most, he couldn't have done anything more subversive to the tyranny if he had planned it, except to just live his life and to worship God. And so now they're telling you on the AP, maybe you shouldn't shake hands. And they have a Kansas City area council that is putting together an event. And they said, well, we didn't know what to do about it. We're so worried that we're going to offend somebody. And so do we give people stickers that say, don't shake my hand? Oh, I know what we'll do. We'll give people, if they want to shake other people's hands, we'll give them a sticker and they can put it on and says, I shake hands. I shake hands stickers. Well, I shake hands. I breathe air. I do everything but lick the door handles to show that there is no corona pandemic here. At the end of the day, because I could get something that's a real problem. At the end of the day, people crave human interaction and human touch, and this is why they're taking it away from us, right? Person said, and you know that psychology experiment where they have the monkeys, and there were some monkeys that they never petted and some that they did, and the monkeys that were not being handled kind of withered away? That's what we're doing to our kids. We're keeping them from seeing faces. We're keeping them from relating to people's faces. We're telling them, don't touch the other kids. Be afraid. Your fellow humans are going to kill you. This is so unbelievably damaging what we're doing right now. And believe me, they know it. They're doing it deliberately. We should not put up with any of this stuff. So Obama has his 60th birthday party. And we have some video that got put out before they took it down. And you can see this here. And you can see him back dancing in the background. He's flipping the camera there to keep him. There he is doing, staying alive, disco. And then he's hugging somebody. Nobody wearing a mask at all in that crowd there. He's just enjoying it, doing his disco dance in his Steve Pachinik shirt. And then hugging people. And nobody has got a mask on. They said they had also, she took it down. Her name is, she's a singer-songwriter, Erica Badu. And then she took that down, but not before people grabbed it. Two disc jockeys also managed to share a picture of Martha's Vineyard setup, despite a ban on pictures and videos. Why would they do that? What are they ashamed of? What are you ashamed of, Obama? Secret Service set up a no-fly zone over the Obama's $12 million mansion right there in an area that's going to flood. Right. According to them, the polar ice caps are going to melt and it's all going to be underwater. And Obama believes that, of course. That's why he bought his mansion there. Alicia Keys sang happy birthday, as did John Legend. By the end of the night, there was a huge traffic jam stretching from their 29-acre estate. What did Obama ever do? Yeah, he became this multimillionaire celebrity simply because of politics. That's the level of corruption that we have in our society. Somebody doesn't produce anything. Somebody that's nothing other than a community organizer until he got into politics. And how do you become a multimillionaire in politics? It paid off. It's graft and corruption. I mean, his net worth is a testimony to our corrupt system, isn't it? The trimmed down guest list of close family and friends read more like the attendees of a Hollywood award show, including people like Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg, but not Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel was, as he put it, mentioned on Friday, he was voted off of the island. He was joking about that with David Axelrod. An Uber driver told the Daily Mail that he drove one couple to the party who were turned away by Secret Service because they were cut from the final guest list. They were dressed to the nines. He was wearing a black suit and tie. She was wearing a luxurious evening gown. They were on the original list, but not on the reduced list. The couple, who had been invited through a high-level political connection, got past first the checkpoint after presenting their original invite, and then were blocked by the second set of guards. And so, as we see him partying there with, you know, a scaled-down party, a group of 400 or 500 people instead of the 700 they originally had there, that is, it's austerity. This is Obama's version of COVID austerity. He's got to cut down his guest list from 700 to 500. And just how do you do that? You know, you have these poor people disappointed. But some of the people who are not disappointed were Jay-Z, Beyonce, Tom Hanks, George Clooney, Bradley Cooper, Oprah Winfrey, Steven Spielberg. Because now the next fortune that the Obamas will make will be in producing propaganda content with their Hollywood buddies at Netflix and so forth. The Obama birthday party guests, again, left early because of the traffic show. You know who was disinvited besides Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod? David Letterman. Oh, well, he doesn't have anything to offer anymore, right? So this is simply who can push the celebrity. So David Letterman was disinvited. Larry David was. Conan O'Brien, because you know Conan O'Brien just retired, so what do you need him for anymore, right? John Kerry was reported that he flew in on a private jet to the Obama birthday party. Now the State Department is denying that John Kerry, who is the Biden State Department's climate envoy, they denied that he flew privately there. I don't know how he got there. You know, maybe he hitched a ride. Maybe he hitchhiked. I don't know. Did he drive himself? Do you really believe that he didn't take... Do you think that he flew commercial? he flies everywhere with a private jet. He's just like Steve Jobs' widow, who's got multiple private jets that she owns. She doesn't even charter them. And decides that you should not go anywhere because if you're not vaccinated. So yeah, they're saying that he did not do that. But Babylon Bee had a great satire piece. Again, talking about what I've mentioned many times, that he bought this mansion in a climate change flood zone. You can go to the internet and you can see where the climate alarmists are telling everybody where, you know, when the polar ice caps melt because you drive a car and eat meat, when they all melt, these are all the coastal areas that are going to be underwater, and it shows that entire area is underwater. But obviously Obama doesn't believe it any more than I do. Obama is a climate scoffer, isn't he? And so, yeah, Fauci and the rest of these people and the press is just NPR, AP, they are going nuts about Sturgis. And it's nice to see that, actually. So we have Rahm Emanuel. And Rahm Emanuel is talking about the mandates. And I want you to listen to this. It's very, very cynical what he says. He says, you know, he's pushing the mandates, but he's got a different name for it. Here's Rahm Emanuel.
Justice Department, now political analyst for the Dispatch. Rahm, let me begin with you. You have to give Dr. Collins points for candor there. He says vaccine mandates can make the difference.
Yeah, I would not use the word mandate. If you're going to look at the 40% of the Americans that don't have a vaccine yet.
It still is a mandate, though.
Right. No, you can call it a requirement. A requirement to participate in the rest of the economy that's opening up. And if you look, the first 60% you can do in mass. The last 40% you got to do strategically based on different sectors of the population. I would not use the word mandate. We're requiring this for X access to the economy. You have to think about people in that way. And I do think that whether you take public employees, as I said the other day on the show, healthcare workers should lead from the front. They have to get vaccinated. You get federal dollars for research at universities, students and employees have to be, and you start setting requirements for access to the rest of society, and it's a part, and then the other piece I would add to this, it's part of your national pledge, because the one thing that he said, and you can see now happening, as the variant gets more dangerous, the population it affects starts to go down the age group. And we are going to get to a time where one of these variants beats the vaccine. And the question is, can we beat the variant?
It's serious, because the other point that Dr.
So you get the idea there, right? It's not a mandate at all. It's a requirement. What is the difference? Well, it's in the way that they sell it to you. As again, they're very careful about the terms that they use. And so because people have been talking a long time about a vaccine mandate, and we really hate the idea, and we know exactly what that means, and we know how much we hate it, so let's not call it a mandate. Let's call it something different, and let's hope that they don't catch on to it before we enact it. That's the way these guys always operate. Yeah, so we're going to call it a requirement to live your life. So you can either stay locked up and masked down for the rest of your life, or you can take this shot. And we need to ask, who elected him dictator? How does he get to do this? Again, the hubris of this, the arrogance of these people. And it ought to really strike you, the more they push on this, and he says, well, you know, the first 60%, they're easy. And then we got to be very careful how we roll this out. You know, it's got to be gradual, and we've got to use special terms to lie to them, to make it seem like it's not what it is, and so forth. This is reprehensible. This is absolute tyranny. I'm glad that Joe Rogan said, you know, we're trending towards dictatorship or whatever. It's starting to look more like a dictatorship. Let me tell you, Joe, we were at a dictatorship 12 days ago. When you start to financially incentivize the lockdown with governors, Republican and Democrat did it. They took the money. They locked things down. When that happens, and when you give bounties to the hospitals, you say, well, you're going to only treat COVID patients, but here, I'm going to incentivize this $12,000 if you get them to test positive, or if you just do a clinical diagnosis and you say, you know, I think that sniffle is COVID. $12,000. Do you think that they can, that's going to influence them to do a clinical diagnosis when they don't have a PCR test? They said that later in the summer. American Hospital Association, you told us to do a clinical diagnosis because you said you didn't have the test and they don't work. And we know the tests don't work when they are cycle threshold of 40. So you financially incentivize that. You give them a 25% bonus on everything that they do. $13,000 up front plus $25,000 on every service that you give them. And you can put them on a ventilator and you can get another $39,000. And we know exactly what this is. The corruption is just unbelievable. And again, I'll remind you that Rochelle Walensky at the CDC says, these vaccines continue to work well for Delta with regard to severe illness and death. They prevent it. But what they can't do is prevent transmission. End of story. End of story. But I see, and again, I had the discussion last week with a Warrington Declaration, one of the co-writers of that. Because I'm seeing articles and videos all over the place, Christians who are saying, what do we do about this? Where do we draw the lines of authority here? Why are you seeing so many of these? Well, because everybody's finally figuring out now, 512 days later, that the lines of authority are being drawn. There is no way that you can avoid that conclusion. The lines of authority are being redrawn. Our legal foundation is being changed under our very feet. And the question is, when did they have the Constitutional Convention to do all of this stuff? Because the Constitution is the legitimate king in our country. And these people swear an oath to uphold the Constitution. They are temporary stewards. They are unfaithful stewards. And when they are unfaithful stewards, you don't have to do anything. They have no authority. They have power. And we recognize that power, their power to be able to inflict harm on people. So, but you treat them with the same respect you would treat a mugger on the street. He's not a lawful officer of the law. He is not God's appointed actor to punish evil and to reward good. He is a mugger. And that's what this government has become. You owe no allegiance to them. They have no authority for what they're doing. They are rewriting all of the codes as we see them right now. All of those lines are being redrawn if we let them. And we've got to not let them. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future.
They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.